Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We're going to have a fun show lined up. We got our PartyCast crew joining later on in the show, but we are starting things off with the guest, John Ribbons of Roll7. How are you doing, sir?
I am good, thank you. It's nice to be back on SNL.
It has been quite a while. You were on
SNL, sorry.
Either one works. You were on like episode 190 something, and now this is like 749.
Jeez, you've been busy.
I have been busy, and you've been busy too. You've been releasing like good games. What's up with that?
You. Yeah, I was trying to think, did we chat after, was it Not a Hero the last time we chatted?
Yeah, the Xbox version of Not a Hero was when you were on last.
Yeah, so that was like 2015. It's been about 7 years, I think.
Yeah. So what's happened in the meantime? What's going on?
So we did Laser League, which was the sci-fi 2v2, 3v3 Tron, but you lost your light cycle and you're running around on foot multiplayer game. And then after that, we kind of took a break. That game was crazy hectic. I think everyone kind of burned themselves out. And so we took sort of 6 months where we, you know, went into the desert like Carlos Santana and tried to find the new sound. and then kind of came back in 2019 and kind of had a deep think about how we wanted to make video games. Like, I think probably the last two times that we spoke on this podcast, we were chatting just after we'd finished a game and probably destroyed ourselves working 13 hours a day, 6 days a week to try and make a thing. And Jeez. We're like, we don't want to make games like that anymore. Like, we want to enjoy the process and that, you know, the people making them have a good work-life balance and enjoy the process of making the games. And so we kind of started prototyping Olly Olly World in 2019. And we were like, we're going to go into this with a different mindset and be like, you know, we're going to work the working hours in the day and we're going to try and be a better studio to work at and, you know, not crunch basically, and try and have a lot more fun making a game.
And the game is Olly Olly World. That game is Olly Olly World. It is coming out. By the time this episode's out, the game is out. So
yeah, it's coming out right now. Like, as time ticks by and the world rotates, it's coming out in all the regions, like as we speak.
Like, people are playing. It is going on. For the people who don't know what Olly Olly World is, give us the sales pitch. What is this game?
Oh gosh. Okay. So Olly Olly World is the third game in the Olly Olly series. And it's set in a place called Radlandia, where everything kind of rotates around skateboarding. And there is a skate wizard in Radlandia who's like the conduit between the skaters of Radlandia and the skate gods above. And that skate wizard is retiring. And so a ragtag crew of misfits, Gnarly Mike, Sue's the filmer, a guy that everybody just calls Dad, and Chiffon, the current skate wizard, they're kind of on a mission to find the next great skateboarder. And obviously it's a video game, so that skateboarder is probably you.
Tell me more.
And so you go on a journey across Radlandia with your little ragtag crew to learn how to be the best skateboarder in the land and meet the skate gods along the way.
And you said it's been in development for 3 years now. Where did the story come from? It's weird to see a skate game that has an actual cohesive story to it.
I assume you're doing the like air quotes when you say cohesive. I mean, so it's interesting because actually last time we chat, right, was Not a Hero. And like one of the things that we sort of said, like when we got to 2019, we were like, okay, I think we'd all like to make another Olly Olly game. I think it's time. You know, we had 4 years off when in 2019, it was 4 years since we'd done Olly Olly 2, Welcome to Ollywood. And I think we were like, I think we could really do it justice and make a better game. And we actually, crazy as this sounds, we went through every single review of Olly Olly 2 and sort of wrote down, you know, what do people like? What do people not like about those games? And not just reviews, but like just looking at what people had said on Twitter and Steam forums and Reddit and elsewhere. I really tried to sort of dig into like what we would change to make it a better game. And I think one of the big things there was going, people drew like fan art from Not a Hero, right? People really loved like Bunny Lord and like Mike and all the like weird characters and all that stuff. And people like drew their own versions of those characters and like really latched onto that world that we created there. And I think we realized with Olly Olly, like we made arguably like a great skateboarding game, like a mechanically great skateboarding game. But it didn't really have there wasn't like a world around it, right? You are literally a man with no face in Olly Olly 2. Like yeah. He doesn't even have a face. And so going into this, we were like, I think one of those kind of missing elements is like to make this a world, not just a series of levels that you play through. It's like a place that exists and it has people that live there and you're going to like go around and meet them while you're skateboarding. And I guess the weird side of it is just, it's just more fun. Like, you know, there's enough skateboarding games out there that are like, you're Joe Amateur and you're going to meet like, I don't know, I don't want to name a real pro, Dave Richards, who's like pro for whatever shoe company and do a kickflip and like, we'll give you a sponsorship. Like that's been done a bunch. So we were like, let's just have fun with it. Let's set it in a crazy place with weird characters. And, you know, skateboarding is the activity that you're doing, but the world that you're in is kind of like fun and quirky and weird.
And one of the big differences is you have faces in this game. Like I'm guessing the change in the whole game engine going from more of a 2D to a 2.5D, 3D-ish world enabled you to give more life and more character to the game characters.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like it's funny when we were going back through. We did a little thing for the team a while back where we were like, let's look at where we've come from. And we went back to like the very first Olly Olly prototype, which was built in like 2011, like 11 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And that was pixel art, but we still had this initial goal with that, but that you'd be able to like recolor all the red pixels, right? You'd had a shirt on and it's red and you could like drag a slider and it would recolor everything red to be like blue or green or pink or whatever. And you could sort of customize your character. So it's been a thing we've always wanted to do, but it's just, that is so hard. Not only saying it's easy to do in 3D, but it's super hard to do customization in 2D because you kind of have to redraw every frame of animation if you've got a hoodie instead of a t-shirt or whatever. So coming at it in 3D, we were like, we definitely want to do customization this time. Like, I think it's, if you look, obviously I'm really into skateboarding in the real world, right? And I think if you look at like, even where skateboarding has gone between 2015 when Olly Olly 2 came out and now, like women's skateboarding has just grown massively, like from 2015 when you were first starting to see like women in street league competitions to like now where you saw like women skateboarding in the Olympics and it was incredible. And just it is a much more diverse sport now than it even was when we released the last game. And so it was just like, if we're going to do another one, the idea that we would release another game in 2022 where you're still just playing like a faceless white guy would be a massive miss, right? There's a whole bunch of people out there who skate who want to be able to represent themselves when they play this game. And so we were like, as much as possible, we want you to be able to make a weird and quirky version of you who's maybe wearing clothes you'd never have the confidence to wear in the real world. But why not give you that opportunity as well?
So how did the character creator come about? Like how does that work?
It started off just being like, okay, we'll do recolored versions of all the different outfits. And then really it's huge props to some of the engineers and the character team who just really kind of went to town with it. And I think that there's a lot of stuff in there where we'd like hit a problem that we never realized was going to be a problem because we've never done character customization before. And then trying to be like, you know, very few games solve this problem. Shall we try and solve it? Like you can layer the clothes, right? Like you can put on a jacket that's open and you can still see the t-shirt that you're wearing underneath that. And like all of those kind of layering issues of like where you can wear this over the top, but how can you see the thing underneath when there's a gap and how does that not clip and all of those things? Like there are a lot of I guess they kind of sound, I'm saying it on a podcast, they sound like boring technical challenges, like, oh, you layered thing A on top of thing F, and like, then can you see both? Like, but super big props to all the team that were involved with that, because they kind of overcame a bunch of stuff that is, I don't know, I feel like it's relatively rare to solve in a game. Like, you can wear a dress in Oli Oli World, and then you can wear a jacket over the top, and it doesn't cancel the other thing out. The dress is still like poking out the bottom of the jacket, and you can layer those things up, which is really cool. And one of those things that was just like, you know, it starts off like, this is a big headache, I don't know if we can do this, and we end up being, you know, come play the build 2 weeks later, and someone on the team's like, yo, we got that in, and it's like, oh my god, this is awesome.
How big is the team on this game?
I mean, we started off in 2019 with about 7 people, and then by like the middle bit of production, when we were super busy, I think we were up to about 60 people.
Oh, wow.
So it's been our biggest game, for sure.
So you have grown.
There's a lot of game.
there is a lot of game. And I am having fun working my way through. I am doing terrible score-wise. I'm getting into this terrible rut of doing the same tricks over and over, and I keep forgetting to switch it up and like do different stick movements. I'm just like, I don't want to fall. I fell.
That's muscle memory. It's going to get you. I mean, that's real life, right? As well. Like, I got one skateboarding trick and I'm going to do it every single time, and I'm not going to learn anything. I'll tell you what made me happy. I listened to the, I can't remember which episode it is, where Jacob played it.
Ah, the last episode. Yeah. What did you think of his talk with the game?
It made me really happy that he was basically like, I didn't really vibe with the previous two. They were a bit hard and I kind of bounced off, but he was like, but I'm in on this one. And like, it works for him. Cause that was, you know, going into this, one of the things was, we want to make a game that more people can enjoy. Cause I think the last two, I'm really proud of what we made, but it's definitely true that a lot of people were like, shit, this is tough. Maybe I'll play something else. So we definitely went into this with the mindset of like wanting to maybe take a bit more time to onboard you with the game and teach you how to play and stuff like that before we, you know, it's always going to end up being a challenging platformer. That's kind of the part and parcel of Oli Oli. But we definitely wanted to take more time to onboard people. So it was really nice to hear that he had a good time.
I can't remember. Did the previous games have checkpoints, or is that something new to Oli Oli World?
No, and I don't know if they've ever been used in a video game before. It's quite the innovation. But yeah, allowing you to restart midway through the level. Who knew that that would make the game a bit easier for people?
Shocker.
It was, weirdly, that is kind of I'm going to use that word, it is kind of a game changer, being like, you don't have, you know, Oli Oli 2 is like, you have to beat the whole level in one go. And if the bit you're struggling with is right before the end, you're going to have to beat the entire level to practice that bit, which is kind of brutal looking back on it. So I definitely think that was a positive change.
Yeah, it was nice when I got near the end of the stage, wiped out, and it just put me a little bit before then. I was like, all right, checkpoints are good. I like this. Oh, wait, I have to beat it without checkpoints for the star. Let me replay the level.
You want a little yellow star, you better go all the way back.
Oh, I want those damn stars.
Like the early testing, one of the folks at Private Division was basically like, "It's like, oh, when I played through the first world, he's like, 100% every level," and they were in this mindset, "I'm gonna 100% every level before I move on." And then he was like, "I got to the second world," and I was like, "Right, I'm just gonna finish every level, but I'll do the challenges." And he's like, "I got to the third world," and I was like, "All right, I'll just finish the level." And then he's like, "I got to the fourth world," and I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna use checkpoints. It's fine. I'll just use checkpoints." And it's like.
But it's the same way I've been.
All right, good.
it really works for the game. It feels really just naturally playing. It feels good. It has a great difficulty progression to it. It's not like I've hit any kind of big walls, and if there is a wall, I usually like ollie off it and then go the other direction. You mentioned Private Division. Y'all are part of the family. When did that happen?
So that was the end of last year. Obviously, we started working with them when we started working on the game. And it's just been a really great relationship. You know, with all the games we've made, like with the first two Oli Olis and Not a Hero and Laser League, we've sort of bounced around different publishers for nigh on 13 years. And there's been good relationships there and relationships that have been a bit more challenging. how's that for diplomacy?
That was a good way to put it.
But like legitimately, like when we showed them the game back in late 2019, I remember one of their team kind of like ran out after the pitch to meet us and just was like, "I skate and I love this. It's like really great. We've got to figure out a way to work together." And so it was really nice knowing like it wasn't just a strategic sign, I suppose, like signing the game because it fitted a catalog or whatever. Like there were people at Private Division who were like really into it, like as an idea of doing a kind of welcoming extreme sport. And so like the last 3 years of working on the game has been the best relationship we've had with a publisher. So to really labor the sort of dating analogy, you know, we dated for 3 years and then they were like, "Do you want to move in together and share the keys to the flat?" And we were like, "Absolutely, yeah, let's make this happen."
They put a ring on it and now you are part of the Private Division family.
Indeed, yeah.
What kind of challenges does that have being acquired?
I mean, what's been really nice is that our kind of whole feedback loop with Private Division has been, you know, you guys know how to make a game and we know how to, well, I was going to say we know how to market a game, but there's a lot more to it than that, right? We know how to get it on all the platforms and do your certification and do your age ratings and like all of the other stuff that you kind of have to do to make a game and get it out in the world, but is not necessarily the thing that we do in-house.
So it's like, you do the game stuff, we'll do the boring shit and make it happen.
Yeah. The complicated stuff, and obviously it's out on 7, I hope I've got this number right, 7 different platforms at once, which is more platforms than we've ever come out on at the same time before, and that's no mean feat to get that done. What's been wonderful is that like they have always sort of been like, they're going to play the game, and they're going to give feedback on the game, but they're not trying to design it for us, right? We're never kind of in a meeting and they're like, "Oh, you should cut this or add a double jump or anything like that." It's been fantastic because it's really felt like the people that we work with at Private Division actually play the game and know the game and understand it. And so can kind of, when we're talking about it, like actually have real insight into what we're making. So we've had some really great feedback from them, but they have like left us to crack on and make the game we want to make. And like, you know, if that wasn't the case, then we definitely wouldn't be here as part of the Private Division family. So it has really felt like, you know, they're like, "We want you to make great games and we'll do all the work around that to facilitate you being able to do it."
That's awesome. And it seems like a really good fit.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. It's been great so far. And like, I'm super excited. We've got, obviously, DLC announced. And then, yeah, I'm straying into things I probably can't talk about at the moment at this point, but exciting things down the line, Joe.
Golden robots are in the background with laser eyes waiting for you to make the wrong call. What kind of DLC is planned for the game? Like, what kind of fun stuff could we expect?
So there are 2 DLCs at the moment, and they... I don't know if I can say too much. They definitely expand on playable space and do some really interesting new things. I've got to say, right, DLC is my favorite bit of working on games. We've not done a lot of it. We did DLC for Olly Olly 2 when it came to Xbox, and we did DLC for Not a Hero on Steam and Xbox. And like, it's such an enjoyable process, right? Because like a lot of the hard bit of making a game is, you know, figuring out the world, figuring out like what all the characters are called. Do these mechanics work together properly? How do we build level? Like there's all of those kind of crazy questions that you've got to figure out that are really hard. Whereas DLC to me feels like you've kind of already figured out the hard stuff.
Now let's just have fun with it.
Yeah, we can have fun with this world that we've built and this set of mechanics that we've got. So, obviously, the team has worked super hard to get the game ready and shipped on time. And like, you know, moving on to DLC is tough in a way because it's more Olly Olly World. But at the same time, I think it's slightly freeing. It's like, okay, we've built this thing. Like, let's have some fun with this now, and like, let's do some interesting tweaks on what's already in there. So it's actually been we've been working on DLC for the last couple months, and it's been a really freeing and enjoyable process.
I'm curious. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but is the DLC going to be like more worlds for the game, or is it just going to be more costumes? Is it going to be a mix?
I can tell you it's not just more costumes.
But there are some new costumes?
There'll be some new stuff to wear, for sure. It's become weirdly... I was watching a stream of someone today being like, you should just launch the game without the game. It's just the customization screen. Just make a character. just Ollie, the dress-up game. We've leaned into that hard on the main game. So there's definitely more things you can wear by the DLC. But like, there's, you know, it's obviously a great opportunity to expand the world too. And we've definitely leant into being able to add more weird and wonderful stuff to Redlandia.
What's the weirdest thing in the game right now?
Okay. I mean, Danny Trejo aside, I mean, there's a buff seagull. There's a frog that does business called BB Hopper. I really love there's a challenge in the forest level to knock a frog off a bee, and there's just this giant frog riding a giant bumblebee around the level, and you've got to like time it so that like you hit a jump and like knock the frog off the top of the bee as it's flying around. And that's one of those things where like, it's actually been a really wonderful thing about like working on Ollie Ollie World is like, it's been really collaborative, right? Like, and because we've kind of got this freedom that it's a slightly weird place, like throughout development, people have come up with something silly. And it's like you're on a call and someone's like, oh, we should have like a hat that's just a turtle that you're just wearing on your head. And he's, you know, and someone else is like, yeah, and he's called Jeff or whatever. And then like you play the game 2 weeks later and someone's made a hat that's a turtle. It's called Jeff and you can put it on your head and ride around with this turtle on your head. Or, you know, we're on a call and it's like, oh, there's a challenge and we need to kind of get you from here to here. And then you should collect something. And someone's like, wouldn't it be more fun if it's just like a frog riding a bee, and everyone laughs about it. And then like you come back a couple of weeks later and
there's a frog riding a bee,
and it's like, oh god, this is great. So I mean, that's kind of why I love setting games in this kind of slightly quirkier space, because it's so freeing. I can't imagine anyone was sitting around when they're making Tony Hawk's like, oh, should we knock a frog off a bee? And it was like, yeah, okay, that fits with the world, let's do it.
Oh geez. So is Jeff the turtle hat in the game? Can I look for that in the game?
Yes. I'm saying it like that because I'm like, I'm still on a dev build. I don't know if Jeff got cut. If Jeff didn't get cut in some kind of D-scope, yes, there is a hat you can unlock. There is a turtle called Jeff.
If Jeff did get cut, it will be DLC, right?
Yeah, it'll be a totally separate piece of paid DLC just for Jeff.
$4.99. Suck it, horse armor.
You can have just the shell for like $1.99. You can have the fleshy bit of Jeff for an additional $3.
Flesh eater Jeff. All right, we're getting into the crazy ideas now. You mentioned no one suggested double jump. Is that something that ever actually came up?
No, fortunately.
How badly would that break this game if you had double jump?
So I don't know how far you've got, so I don't want to like spoil any mechanics you might not have yet, but you'll find this anyway, so hopefully it's fine. But like, we now have late tricks, so you can do like a flip trick and then hold on, looking at an Xbox controller, and then hold B and do another trick input while you're in the air and do a second trick after the first one, which is kind of Tony Hawk-y, because obviously Tony Hawk, you could jump and kick flip, and we were like, we don't want to do that, but legitimately in skateboarding people do late tricks, right? So you do one trick and then you do another trick as the board's kind of falling, and so we're like, that'd be cool. So we put it in as a prototype to try it out, and when we first put it in as a prototype, when you did the late trick input, it also applied the jump physics again, so we kind of accidentally made a double jump, because you could like do a kickflip and then as you're falling hold B and do another kickflip and you'd launch a second kickflip, but it would jump you again no matter what bit of the fall you were in. And it's just massively game-breaking. Like, it's, you know, the levels are so, the designers work so hard to build these things really tightly, and like from beginning to end, they've got to consider your momentum all the way through, and obviously where you land on a downhill grind can have so much effect on your speed and stuff like that. And so giving you that freedom to pop a second jump anywhere in your jump, obviously at some points gives you a lot of freedom to do some really, really interesting combos, but also gives you a lot of freedom to, trying to find a synonym for fuck, mess it up for yourself. you can really like mess up your run with that. So it's just like, no, we're gonna, the leg tricks don't give you any boost, they just give you another trick and another score in the combo, but they don't give you a double jump.
I'm so happy that you said looking for a synonym for fuck. Oh, that's beautiful. I love it. Do you think that could be like a special hidden mode in the game? Like, could you have maybe like a double speed version of the game, a half speed version of the game, a double jump version of the game, just weird stuff like that, like in a hidden Easter egg menu?
I mean, we spent a long time in prototype on the early world, right? Like most of 2019 was us kind of going like, we've got got a great game in Olioli 2. We've got set mechanics that work. We've got like a way that the game works. There's things we want to change, right? We want to make landing less punishing. We want to like free you up in terms of rotation because we're 3D now. But then obviously there's just this like huge platter of other ideas that were like, this could be cool. And obviously a bunch of stuff made the cut, quarter pipes going right to left, like grabs, all those kind of things. There was a whole bunch of other things, even like non-gameplay stuff, like we had bullet time in there at one point where like you could just hit a button and for a little amount of time you could like make the whole game go slow-mo. So on the really tricky bits you could like and slow down and see all the tricks, and
that's looks cool.
Really cool. But again, it kind of like, there's a lot of stuff where it's like it works, but if you use it wrong you can really mess the game up for yourself. But now you've got me thinking like cheat codes would be really cool, like back, you know, PS1 style, put the really long combination of stuff in, you got massive head, or like the whole game runs at half speed or whatever. But you know, there's two DLCs on the way, and we definitely play with how some elements of the game work in those DLCs. So I'm going to be like ambiguous and say never say never, Joe. There may be cool things in those.
I love the ambiguous answers. Those are always the fun ones. How did COVID impact development? That's something we didn't have to worry about the last time we chatted. The world's different place, got this shitty disease screwing things up.
Yeah, I mean, last time we spoke, we made Not a Hero, so we didn't go outside because we were just trying to make a video game with no idea how to do it. And now we didn't go outside because of COVID. It's been interesting. Like, so in actually, just after we spoke in 2015, we had an office in Southeast London, and after we finished Not a Hero, we were like, everyone spent a long time at the studio. One of the other founders had just had kids, and we just kind of thought, we don't need an office to do this. Like most of the time, everyone just sits there with headphones on anyway. A lot of people started asking if they could work at home so they could have some time to concentrate and, like, you know, not have the distractions of an office going on around them while they are working on stuff. And so in 2015, we actually were like, okay, let's get rid of the office and just everybody works from home. And so Laser League, which was late 2015 through 2018, so those 3 years that we were working on that game, we were completely remote anyway. Everybody, that was 35 people and everybody worked at home. And we met up once a month, like everybody came to London once a month and we just had we didn't like do any work meetings, right? We'd just sit around for the day and like play the game, talk about it, talk about what people were working on, people would do little presentations about what they were doing. But basically like we were fully remote. So it was kind of weird going into March 2020 and having lockdown, because I think a lot of people the last few years have experienced working from home because they had to. But I don't think they've experienced the best version of working at home, because our experience from 2015 through to 2019 of working at home is like, I get to the end of the working day and I'm already home. I don't have an hour long commute. I'm not sitting in traffic and stuff. I'm right there. Like my wife's in the next room. Like we can just hang out. Whereas the 2020 version of working at home was like, you finish work and then you just never fucking leave your house because everyone's got to stay indoors. And that sucked. And yeah. So it was really hard because we had a lot of people who were really hyped to work for us and really hyped to, you know, work remotely. And we were having to be like, you know, this isn't what it's always like. This is an anomaly in working remotely. So I think on the upside, you know, we know how to do it. Like we've been doing it for 3 years before before everyone was forced to do it. So we'd kind of figured some stuff out about like what works and what doesn't. But that didn't necessarily make it any easier. You know, it's really tough when people have got, they're trying to ship the game for a milestone and they've got both their kids home because they've both got, you know, both their kids have got COVID and they're not at school and they're having to homeschool their kids at the same time. And So yeah, we had to move a lot of stuff around. We kind of moved the flexi time out so people could work 7.5 hours anytime between like 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. To kind of give people more flexibility in their day. And we tried to do fun things like, you know, playing games on like doing big Zoom meetups and doing like weird treasure hunts and all kinds of silly stuff. But I am glad that we're hopefully kind of getting back to doing meetups. There's people on the team, you know, you're saying grew to 60 people. There's people who worked on OlliOlli who I have never met in real life. Like they joined the studio 2 years ago and they've done amazing work and I've no idea how tall they are.
Yeah, that's how this show is too. There's two co-hosts who aren't even part of the show anymore. I don't know what they look like. They were on the show for years. I couldn't pick them out in a lineup if I had to, but I know their voice. So how did it, like, the lack of conventions and the lack of public hands-on really affect the development of OlliOlli World? Because I'd imagine the first games you would be able to take it to something like PAX or E3 or something like that to let people have some hands-on time with it and see what the game is like and get real-time feedback. But without any conventions, what did you guys do to get that real-world feedback?
Yeah, that's been interesting. So I think yeah, from our side, like, huge credit to Private Division on this, right? Like we were saying earlier, you know, that they're like, we know how to market the game and get the game out there and on the platforms, and you guys make a good game. And like from their point of view, they've had the entire sort of rule book of how you show a game to the public, like, just blown out of the water in the last few years. And they did like a really amazing job of setting up like the online hands-on events and like the digital hands-on stuff back last year. And it's kind of bizarre because I think because we didn't just have to show people the game at a show, we were like, right, this is our digital hands-on event. If you're interested, kind of get in touch. And they got in touch with a bunch of people. We actually reached more people by it being digital and being able to just send it out to people, I think, than we would have if we'd been at a PAX. But I think the bit, it's weirdly for me, right, it was less about the loss of, I don't know, like a marketing beat or a marketing opportunity, but like not being able to do those shows is, they're like a good barometer, right? You, the video game, you basically shut yourself in a cupboard for 3 years and make a thing with no idea if everyone's going to like it, right? And like, the nice thing with all the stuff we've made previously is in that last year, as you're building up to release, you go to all these shows and you're there and like real humans come and play your game and, you know, fingers crossed, they have a good time while they're playing it and they get to meet you and you have a chat, whatever. And you notice some stuff that maybe isn't working, but you also notice the stuff that people really like, really resonates with them. And that, and you kind of, I don't know, you get to the end of a PAX and a whole bunch of people have played it. You get to the end of an E3 or whatever it is, a whole bunch of people have played it and you come back psyched, right? And anyone on the team who comes to the show to be on the stand for a bit, like, they come back like stoked because they're like, people played it, people like it, like, yes, it, like, gives you energy for that final, whatever you call it, sprint to the finish. And just, it was weird not having it this time around, like not having those shows to go to and like not really knowing if people were gonna like it until like last week was scary.
What's the response been so far? It's only been a few days that reviewers have had it and have been able to talk about it. Do you have a spreadsheet up yet of what people like and hate?
I'll be honest, I'm just focusing on the positives for now. we'll come back and look at the negatives in a couple of weeks.
I've seen a lot of positive reviews for this game.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Like, I'm really, whatever. I'm personally really happy. It's great that we've made a game that, like, you know, a lot of people in the press have like super enjoyed. I'm super happy for all the team that have worked on it and sort of poured their love and imagination into a thing to see like that real people out there are playing it and like noticing all the little details that like everyone on the team put like love and time into making, like seeing actual people on streams and stuff find that shit and get excited. I was watching a stream like while I was eating my lunch when someone in the chat of the stream was like, can you take your shoes and socks off and skate barefoot? And he was like, probably not. And he went and took his shoes and socks off and realized he could. And it was just like, oh, this is awesome. So no, it's a hype. Obviously it's gradually real, not that members of the press are not real people, but real people are playing it right now. So, I mean, I guess we'll see. over the course of today what people think. But yeah, so far it's been super positive, and that makes me happy. I'd say, what interesting anecdote, Tom, who's one of the other founders, said something that I thought was really interesting. Like, on all the previous games we've made, everybody, unless so Laser League, right, but the ones before that, we were really new to making video games, and we put in, like, we kind of, you know, gave up real life for the last year of each of those games and just worked, like, flat out. And so the launch for those was stressful because you were sitting there going, like, if this doesn't review well, like, I fucking wasted, like, a whole year just doing this thing. If it's not a success, then I feel like I just absolutely wasted my time and gave up a bunch of stuff, right? Like, for the sake of making it. So it's interesting with this one that we hadn't crunched. Like, we worked really, everyone still worked really hard. I'm not saying, like, everyone on the team, that people weren't stressed in the hours they were working to deliver the game. But, you know, we didn't work late into the night. We were like, you know, you get to the end of the day and you go and see your family or hang out with your friends or, you know, have a life, right? So it's a slightly different mindset coming into this because it wasn't this like, oh my gosh, I gave up everything to make this thing happen. But it's a different pressure this time around, right? Because it's a bigger team, a lot more people put their time and their effort into it. And so it's really wanting, you know, I really want it to come out and I really want it to be positively received because I feel like a lot of people put a lot of love and imagination and creativity into it. And I hope that resonates with people. So, yeah.
You mentioned that you were lurking in a stream when someone took off the shoes and socks. Have you been lurking in a lot of streams? Have you been making yourself known in any streams? Like, hey, that's my game.
I am now old enough and incompetent enough at technology to have not realized that I had to, like, follow people and then sit on a stream for a certain amount of time before they could even see a comment I made. No, I don't know. I think it's a weird flex to be like, hello, I'm the dev. I just lurk quietly. But yeah, obviously it's out now, right? The next few nights is going to just be, Twitch will just be on the television, and I'll either be watching it and crying when people don't understand something or cheering when they finally beat that level.
What is in the game to not understand? Like, what can really confuse someone with this game?
Do you want to know the funniest thing? So we put checkpoints in. We talked about that, right? Like, checkpoints, sweet. You don't have to restart the whole level. And then the thing that so many people miss is that if you tap Y, you restart. And if you hold Y, it restarts the beginning of the level. And so many people I watch just hold Y every time and restart the whole level. And I'm like, no, you could have just tapped it and just gone back like 3 meters instead of doing the whole thing again. And I'm like, oh man, how did we not make that clearer? So that's the whatever the thing. There's always that thing that everyone's going to miss, right? And then it comes out, and you kick yourself for not thinking about it. I think the tap Y hold Y gate, as it will be known in years to come, is probably the thing. I'm like, damn it, we should have done a better job there.
Is that something you could, like, patch in, like throw in an early patch? I don't know how you would accentuate that option in the game.
Just a pop-up at the start, like full screen, just like tap Y to restart checkpoints. Also, sorry, we didn't tell you this before. yeah, I don't know. But I think with the rest of it, I think actually Jacob kind of talked about this when he was talking about the game, but like that approach of being like nearly the whole game is a tutorial now. Like we're going to bring this stuff in really, really gradually. And like for the most part, you don't have to do any of it. Like you can go end to end. You can go from the first level of Sunshine Valley to the last level of Las Volgas and pretty much just do push, ollie, wall ride, and any one grind of choice, and it will get you through the whole game. Like, you can see the whole story, and like you can get to the end of the game, and I won't spoil it for anyone, see the stuff that's at the end. Everything else, like Latrix and manuals and like grind switching and finishing the level in a single combo and all that kind of stuff, is like purely optional. So, which I think is positive, right? Because not everyone wants to break their controller to finish our game.
Yeah, I don't want to break mine. I have an Elite. Those things are expensive, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe put a bit of duct tape on that left analog stick so you don't wear off.
End up throwing it at one of my cats.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's nothing I can do about cat-related controller violence in your own household. That's entirely up to you. I can just help you prevent you damaging that analog stick.
Oh, I figure I'd give you an update before I Before everything was all set up with this interview, I went back to listen to the old interviews to just bring myself back on what we talked about. And Potato is still around. We still have Potato. So she is adorable. Okay. And we are up to 13 cats.
13 cats?
Yes.
Wow. That is a lot of cats, Jim.
Yeah, we refer to ourselves as an accidental rescue.
Is this just in your neighborhood now, is the legend? Is this where cats know that they should come, should they need food and shelter?
We during the summer, we take care of some outdoor strays, too, that just come around and go house to house. So we love kitties.
Do they all have names?
Yes.
Do you want to name check, shout out all the cats?
Okay, let's see. We have Piddles, Punk, Peaches, Potato, Coltrane, Pork, Bean, Predator, Mama, Pickle, Peanut, Butter, and Jelly.
Okay, boom, Pork, 13 Bean, for Predator, 13. I am stealing as a three-word name for a character in another game that we're going to make.
You are welcome to use all those names as much as you want.
I like Piddles. Is that the first one?
Yep, she's our oldest.
Is she named that because of accidents that might happen around the house?
No, that's been her name for her whole life. I thought it was a cute name.
She just grew into it.
Yeah. Actually, Peaches, she's the one who's been going outside the litter box. We've been having issues with her. She has, I think, kidney failure. So we don't know how much time we have left with her, but we love her. We're giving her pets and scritches while we can. And treats, lots of treats, way too many treats. Oh my God, we go through so many treats. Do you have any pets?
When we last spoke, I had a pet, but I don't have a pet anymore. I used to have a cat called Sasquatch, who sort of, I was convinced, might be the reincarnation of a murderer. my ex-partner took Sasquatch with her when we broke up. Yes, it turns out that she then lived somewhere with a garden, or a much bigger garden, and it did do a pretty efficient job of murdering all wildlife that stepped into that 5x7 meter square behind her house, including a seagull at one point, which I thought was quite impressive.
Do you ever get letters in the mail with like pasted letters that just says "watch your back" and then a paw print at the end?
I'm coming for you, paw print. Yeah. No pets since then, since that traumatic pet experience, nonsense.
Oh man. So what are you doing with yourself these days? What games are you playing? What are you enjoying? What are you looking forward to?
So, that's a bunch of questions. I'm currently playing, and if you've finished it, please don't say anything. I'm currently really enjoying Inscription on PC.
I have not played that one, so I can't spoil anything for you.
Oh, it is good. It is a good game. It's like indescribable. It's like a card game. It's like a deck building card game meets escape room, meets sort of weird under your skin horror. Which has been taking up a bunch of my time. And then I guess, like the other 87 billion people, Wordle. Wordle is my shit. And my mother-in-law actually recommended Absurdle, which is like Wordle, but it uses an algorithm. Like, you know, like Wordle is like, it picks a word every day and you try and guess the word. Whereas like Absurdle is like, it picks a word and then if it thinks you're going to guess it, it changes the word and it only lets you guess it correctly when it has no other options left and has to give up and be like, all right, it's float, whatever.
Wow.
So I've been enjoying that. But honestly, like, you know, it reaches this point with the video game dev where I've been quite enjoying getting away from screen time at the end of the day. So Inscription was a bit of an anomaly. Like in the last few years, obviously lockdown, multiplayer games, great way to hang out with people. I played a ton of Sea of Thieves, and yeah, weirdly, I played 700 hours of Fortnite in 2020.
Wow.
Who'd have thought? I just got into that shit, and now I can build a hotel in 3 seconds flat out of wood and shoot rockets from the top of it. And GTFO at the end of last year and a bit at the beginning of this year, I've been really enjoying that. The sort of co-op, it's not a roguelike, kind of like Payday, but in a subterranean world where everything's weird and throbbing and wants to kill you.
Interesting. I've seen a lot about GTFO, but I haven't played it myself. I've never been much of a PC guy. Like I just stick to my consoles. So
yeah, it sounds bad. My PS4 has just become the thing I watch Netflix on. But yeah, no, GTFO is good. I was like pleasantly surprised that it's really solid. You need like 3 friends to enjoy. Oh, and you're noticing a trend here of like collaborative multiplayer, but Deep Rock Galactic as well.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. What's your class?
It's been so long since I've played it, I don't even remember. Because I played it when it was still in game preview. Me and Cole, when she was still a part of the show, we were playing it. And I watch people play it these days, and I'm amazed at how much it has grown. And it keeps reminding me that I need to download it and see what is new that I didn't play when it was in preview. I have this horrible trend of playing a game for like 4 hours and then never getting back to it.
It's tough with those ones as well when you got to persuade like 2-3 friends to jump in with you.
And I don't have friends. People don't like me. I got to get Jacob to play more games. He's too busy playing Hot Wheels.
Oh, the new Hot Wheels racing game.
Yeah, he loves it. He is absolutely addicted to Hot Wheels Unleashed.
Yeah, that one. Actually, someone on our team joined us from the studio that made Hot Wheels. It looks super good. It's actually like something I want to check out.
Yeah, my only gripe with that is they don't do the smart delivery thing where you get it on both platforms. You have to pick either Xbox One or Xbox Series X for which disc you want to buy.
I tell you what I did see recently. I went to see the Hot Wheels Monster Trucks in real life, which was pretty cool.
Ooh.
Because they, I have no idea why. They sponsor real monster trucks. Hot Wheels sponsor the real ones.
I didn't know there were monster trucks.
I don't know what came first, man, the Hot Wheels monster trucks or the real monster trucks sponsored by Hot Wheels, but whatever, they sponsored them, and I went and I saw a giant rectangular T-Rex eat a car. It was pretty gnarly.
That sounds ridiculous. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's one of those things I've always wanted to go to when I've been in the US, but never had the chance. And then I came to the UK and I was like, I'm in to see monster trucks.
You doing it?
Doing it.
Nice. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that I didn't bring up?
No, I think I'm good. It's been a pleasure. I'll see you in 4 years. No, it's been really good to chat, man. And like, thank you so much for like, not just this chat, but Jacob playing as well and doing his review. It's great. It's great that you guys have always kind of had our backs, played our stuff.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. Everybody else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show, so stick around. John, give us all the details. Where can we get the game? How much is it? Where can people stay in touch with you? Hit us.
So, speaking to you from the past now, Oli Oli World is out on all of the platforms, all of the Xboxes and PlayStations and Switch and PC right now. And I'm John, I, do you know what? This is super terrible. We are at @roll_7 on Twitter. Do give us a follow.
Cool. Sounds good. Do you have any final words before we end?
If you do pick up the game, thank you so much for playing it. And I hope you have a wonderful time. And if you don't, then that's fine. But you're missing out. I realize actually this isn't video, so you can't see me flapping my arms around. But...
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to John Ribbons at Roll 7 for coming on and chatting about Olly Olly World. It is out now. Go check it out. Have any of y'all played Olly Olly World yet?
Olly Olly no. Oxen Free, no.
No? You gotta change that.
Somebody reviewed it.
Jacob did.
No. It doesn't, well, I guess episode releases, but the game itself released today in record time, didn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah, we did the interview yesterday before it released. We're doing the reviews, the PartyCast reviews today when the game released, and then the episode's going to come out tomorrow, and no one's going to give a shit about any of this. But PartyCast, Tim's here, like Purnell is here,
like Party Pooper Cast,
Chris is here.
Wait, the listeners don't know that yet. Come on, let them live in fantasy camp.
No Brooke this week, but we have Aki subbing in. Aki, how are you doing?
Not good.
Nice.
Yeah, you knew the answer to that question already, Joe.
I know.
I'm not pretending. I know. I don't pretend. I don't have the effort for that right now.
Fuck me. So how's everyone else doing?
Well, I'm in the middle of misery week, but in my defense,
why is it misery week?
It's a long story of me being like a loveless sap type, but and some bad memories. But I was about to say, in my defense, though, I am good at rolling with the shit, so I can make that work regardless. But yeah, there's a fair bit of that. But good games have been a nice time sink. And I'll be honest with you, in times of frustration and depression and anything else, somehow games generally tend to do the trick as a nice, beautiful distraction. So I'll take them.
Yeah, games are good.
As long as they're good games. Not like the ones we're reviewing tonight, but good ones, other ones.
Oh no.
Good point. Uh-oh.
Tim, are you not our beacon of sunshine this episode?
that was sunshine.
Yeah. Not these shitty titles.
Jokes, Joe.
Some shitty titles on this episode. Let me tell you what.
Well, we talked a little about Tim's game earlier in the week, he and I, and I'm not sure how this review is going to turn out, but we'll find out, kids. Stick around.
I feel better about it now than I did when I talked to you, so.
That is good.
That patch did some work for that game, I'll say that, in terms of its playability.
That is good. So, should we just dive into review? Should we just cut the bullshit and get right to it?
Let's splish and splash.
Cut the crap.
Yeah, let's cut the crap.
It's all business tonight.
We're the mullet. This is
Brooke
the...
isn't here with her endless tangents, right? Am I right?
Yeah, Brooke.
If there's anybody on this show that just will cut us off and talk monologue for 20 to 30 minutes at a time, it is Brooke.
Yeah, totally Brooke. Yeah.
Damn.
100%. Let's not question it.
What are we talking about? I totally spaced out. I'm sorry.
So yeah, first game to talk about tonight is called Death End Request 2, developed by Idea Factory and Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International, released February 8th on the Switch for $49.99. A girl in escape of her past comes to the mountain town of Lechora, searching for her long lost sister. Little does she know, the town is home to buried secrets, dark creatures that prowl the night streets in a sinister sacrificial sequence. Can she fight the darkness, or will the darkness consume her? Chris, tell us about your time with the Switch release of Death End Request 2.
Sinister is what I'm hearing.
Sinister sacrifice. What was it? Sinister
sacrificial sequence.
That's some nice alliteration there.
Yes.
Death End Request 2. Okay, well, I covered this back when it came out on Steam, so, but lucky. Since then, well, thank you. I enjoy the Compile Heart games. Based on, like, the thing is, I played this game and I didn't play the original, and based on Purnell's sort of counterpoint, I did go back and actually play the original and then came back to this one. I haven't beaten either of them, but I do at least, well, they're very long.
They are at least
fair.
Yeah, they're very long games. I mean, I put 92 hours into Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, so you know I'm good for it.
These are not 92 hours, I can tell you now.
No, but that's how much I put into that game, because I got all three endings,
nice.
Which involves three different playthroughs, yeah. And, but yeah, so with this one, This is a sequel to the original Death End Request, and now I know that for sure because little did I know the first time I played through this, but characters from the first game do absolutely show up in this game. And they, although I will say that the story is different enough that it can be treated like a standalone game, it's just that, you know, when you do, sometimes there will be a character that'll be like, ta-da, it's me, and you'll be like, who are you? Yet another one of this. The endless sea of, like, you know, goth anime stereotype girls. But no, actually, you're important for some reason, and now we know why. So anyways, yeah, so this is a visual novel JRPG hybrid, which I would say leans very much on the visual novel side of things versus, like, some of the other games of Compile Heart and Idea Factory. You play as Mai, who, you know, she came from a real rough background. She had to murder her own father in self-defense and ended up at an all-girls school in a weird town in somewhere in Europe that has its own built-in religion. So there's no way that's going to go wrong.
we've all been there.
We've all been there.
And, at one time.
Yeah, so, you know, she dons her her very goth anime stereotype like attire and proceeds to go to school and instantly is beset by bullies and murder mysteries and a very strange happening, which is that when she goes out past midnight, kind of like Gremlins, the entire town like turns into weird glitchy spidery stuff with, like, you know, body horror type enemies just like roaming the streets, and she has to murder all them with an axe, and, you know, like you do.
Nice.
Like, and, you do.
So by day it's like this, like, sort of, you know, you've got your overly serious just trying to get stuff done type protagonist. She's, you know, looking for her sister who has gone missing and is her only surviving relative that is worth noting. And but you're also getting to know, like, a whole school's worth of, like, anime girls and stuff, which is, of course, a huge feature of lots of these Compile Heart games, you know, especially something like Mary Skelter. Although this is more of like a horror game than Mary Skelter. Mary Skelter is a little more like, I don't know, horror themed, like, kind of fantasy, I would say. But yeah, this one straight up has, like, you know, murders and screams and you know, gushing blood type of situations. But yeah, by day,
oof.
Yeah, exactly. By day, you're basically doing the visual novel side, which is getting to know the students, sort of trying to unravel the mystery, and making choices, some choices of which result in characters dying for the rest of the game, and there's not really anything you can do about it except make the good choices. And then by night, it's the gameplay where you and your roommate, Roddy, whose name is short for Rotten. Like,
her mother think really hated her.
you know what? Actually, that kind of ties into the plot a little bit. Her relationship with her mother, who named her Rotten.
Rotten Dollheart.
And, you know, unlike Mary Skelter, there doesn't seem to be, anyway, a dating sim aspect to it, like, because Mary Skelter had a dating sim attachment as well, but it does have a little bit of that, you know, girly romance that we've all come to expect, and so that's kind of nice, too, although, again, it plays with tropes in, like, ways that might make you uncomfortable, so that's just completely up to you. Basically, there's a lot of girls that perv out on each other, like, constantly in this game. And, you know, if you're cool with that, then you're cool with this game.
School.
You have Aki's attention.
Aki's here, right?
Yeah, yeah, I know. Aki has said many times that she's a fan of this game. Yeah.
I don't know about this one. I haven't actually played this one. Got it on Steam because I couldn't play it.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Which, you know, unfortunate, but yeah,
Yeah.
Sucks so that's, for you.
Yeah, that's the game. Just wait, I'll get a good computer, and then you ain't getting shit.
Fine with me. Yeah, go for it. I'm gonna buy these games if I don't review them. So I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me.
I'm pretty sure I've bought this one actually, even though nice. I didn't play it.
Yeah, I bought the first game twice. I bought it on Steam and Switch. Nice. But anyways, so. That's basically the game in a nutshell. Now, the good parts is that the visual novel side is very well written. The art of the characters, which do kind of have their own little animation sort of loop that goes through, you know, wind blowing through hair and clothes moving. You know, they're not like static characters. And this is, you know, something that you'll see a lot in Compile Heart type games. You know, the visual novel aspect's really well written, very, very pretty to look at. All the girls look really cool, and like they've all got like neat costumes, and you know, some of them have kind of like two-dimensional personalities, but that's okay. You can always make a choice in the visual novel side and have them murdered.
Cold as ice.
You can also not. I mean, it just depends on how you like to play your video games.
I like my girls to live. Thank you.
Me too. That's my personal choice, but I'm not going to impose that value on anyone else.
We don't kink shame.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the visual novel side is really nice. The gameplay side is a little less nice. The Steam port versus the Switch port is also kind of a downgrade going to Switch, because it involves running around a map. Almost always it's just the town, like I said, with spidery glitchy things coming out and like monsters roaming the streets and stuff, and you run into them, you get into battle. The battle takes place in a ring. It looks like it's going to be an action RPG sequence, but it is actually really turn-based. You run around, you choose to hit a monster in one of many, many different ways. There's lots of special skills that you learn and stuff. And then it bounces them off the walls. And if you can bounce them towards another character, that character then gets in a free hit, and that bounces them around. That side is actually pretty fun, but like the game has this tendency to be like, oh, you're having fun, are you? Here's a boss with a million HP, and you have to actually master this in order to get through. Or just equip one of the thousands of like top end items that we give you right at the beginning of the game, because this is a later port. So it's exactly like Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force. They just dump all the best items in the game on you right at the beginning. So you can actually just skip the action sequence and kind of just watch your character murder everything like amazingly with a fish. Literally one of the items is a fish that instead of her hand axe. So
And that's one of the ones they give you at the start now.
Yeah, it's just unlocked right at the start. I don't know if it's like DLC that was included with my copy, but I don't think so, because again, Fairy Fencer F was the same way. And actually, funny enough, for each character, there's also a weapon that's a throwback to Mary Skelter. So this game actually has some Mary Skelter references sprinkled throughout as well. Yes. So the action sequences, or you know, the gameplay sequences, I feel aren't quite as good as the VN sections anyway, but on the Switch version, the animation and frame rate suffers a lot. When you're running around town, it does get a bit choppy. Even when you're doing battles, it doesn't feel as smooth as like that Steam port did. And again, this is very common for these Switch ports. So it's a trade-off of performance where you actually at least still get, you know, that portability factor, which I like, because I mostly play these games in the like 3 or 4 hours between bed and when I actually fall asleep, which is how I got 92 hours in on Fairy Fencer F. But I will say that in this case, it is, you know, that does knock it down a couple points if there's a point scale. But honestly, I really like this game, and I like these characters, and I actually do feel compelled to play this one through the end, especially now that I know how it ties into the first game, which Purnell can back me up on.
It's intriguing what happens.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, the story has twists and turns and mysteries and stuff to it. It really does keep you coming back, so I do like that about it quite a lot.
Nice. I will ask you this, though, as a person who reviewed the game and has now that you've played a bit of it. So this isn't a spoiler for folks, because it's a gameplay mechanic. So you know about the idea of, like, you know, the town gets all twisty-wisty, and you start to learn why it's twisty-wisty. and a factor of that is the special attack you get that every character has at the very start, where they glitch out.
The glitch, yeah.
And it bugged me from a narrative perspective, because there was a number of things that was like, okay, the visual novel's really good, so I'll forgive this. But the fact that they glitch out, they don't react to it at all. They don't acknowledge it yet.
They kind of did they even react in the first game? Okay, so
the first game it made sense that they did.
It did make sense, yeah. But yeah, I guess they aren't really. I can't really talk about it without going into the spoiler territory. But yeah, it didn't bother me so much. But also, again, if you're fighting with the top end weapons and you got the game anything less than like the hardest mode, you're probably not going to see glitch mode for a while. So glitch mode is a little bit like a limit break where your character changes their appearance and becomes like super strong, and they get, you know, those, they really start knocking back those enemies. They're also mostly naked at this point. It basically takes all their clothes off and replaces, you know, it censors them with like glitchiness.
Gosh, so, like, tell me more.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to. Getting your characters into glitch mode.
The game is $49.99. How does it stand up with fan service and performance and everything else? Is it worth the money for the Switch version? Should people stick with a different console? What should they do with their money?
So, is this on PS4 as well? I didn't even check.
It is. That's where I played it.
Yeah, I would honestly. Did it perform well on PS4?
Honestly, yeah. I mean, it was typical, you know, Idea Factory game type, you know, like issues here and there, but it was nothing that was game breaking and nothing that was like choppy or nothing bad.
Okay, yeah, because I feel the same way about Fairy Fencer F. I got the PS4 port recently, and I'm actually playing through that now, and it's so much nicer. So I'm gonna say, if you want the best experience and you want to own the game like a physical or whatever, seek it out on PS4. Steam as well is going to perform better. Honestly, I say go for it on the Switch if you are a primarily Switch gamer, and if the little bit of a drop in frame rate doesn't bother you. And I would seek out the physical version, because $49.99 for a download, you know, you're going to be waiting for a sale on that one, because these games go way down in price at certain points.
Yeah, I ain't paying $50 for no digital only. The heck with that, boogers. Personal politics there.
And it's 7 gig for those who worry about file size.
Oh, that's less than Fairy Fencer F. That was 8.5 gigs.
There you go. 7.3, I think it said. Anyway, next game to talk about is Maglam Lord, all caps, developed by Felestella, published by P-Cube, released February 4th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $39.99, an action JRPG straight from the depths of hell. Embark on an epic adventure to awaken your full power, enter the fantasy world of Yuuzhan, and play as male or female Kilzerk, the demon lord of swords, who, after losing their power, is the last of the demon lords. Explore the world in a bid to bring your species from the brink of extinction. Brunel, tell us about your time with Maglam Lord.
So Maglam Lord is a bit of a weird premise in a sense. So this is all beginning of the game, so nothing's a real spoiler per se. The concept here is that your main character, like Joe said, is a demon lord, and the name is there, Kilzerk, and you live in a world where gods and demons coexist. However, gods and demons cannot harm each other. They can only be harmed by humans that attack them using special weapons that humans themselves learn to develop, called maglums. So demons and gods use humans to pit humans against each other on their behalf, essentially to like war back and forth, because they can't personally harm each other. Now, the twist in this game, and the reason why it starts out the way it does, is because your character is the Blade Lord. And as the perk to being the Blade Lord, unlike other gods and demons, they can wield Maglums, which makes them able to kill gods and demons. So they collectively band together to take her out, or them out. And at the last minute, they get saved by an associate, and they're kind of put into like a deep sleep. But when they come to, the world is a really different place. Apparently, gods and demons no longer exist. The world is actually somewhat at peace, and things are being run by a group known as the Organization of the Administration. They don't tell you much about themselves or who they are, just that they exist. They run things, and you are on lockdown under their jurisdiction. You're also labeled as an endangered species because you're supposedly the last of your kind. So you're also under their protection. So the idea behind this game is that your character is trying to slowly gain their power back, and this is done by the way of like fighting, you know, I guess like they call them muta beasts, basically the monsters of the world, by fighting them on various quests and fulfilling missions in a typical, you know, game narrative fashion to slowly bolster your skill up. Now, the thing about it, and where the reason the concept of the game really factors in, is due to the fact that your character is so weakened right now in their current state, they can't fight monsters in their own way. So what has to happen is they can forge Maglum, and I'll talk about what forging them consists of, take the weapons into themselves, and then human heroes can wield the Blade Lord in combat. So the game is essentially humans wielding your character in battle to slowly build your power levels back up. The gameplay loop itself, however, is done in the form of being at your home base and taking on quests off of like a request board. They can range from anything from like collecting a bunch of items to fighting monsters to fulfilling a specific request. And when you choose a mission, it sends you to a particular location like Starlight Hill or the Wacky Factory. I made that name up, but there's like factories.
No, really? Factory isn't an official location in this game.
You know what? I lied. It's a real location in the game. Eat it.
That the sounds twisty whisty coming from you.
Wacky tacky, baby. But what happens is you choose one hero from the roster of heroes you acquired in the game. They come at you from a narrative perspective. They're not like secret heroes or anything. You choose a hero and then you go out into the field. Exploration is a top-down affair. So you run around on a map that's connected by zones. So it's like, you know, one square of space and you move either up or left to the next square of space. And there's monsters that run around in there. If you get into a combat sequence, it turns into a 2D side-scrolling combat thing. Think of like classic Tales games like Tales of Destiny or Tales of Eternia. And what's up happening is your character runs left to right. They can attack using their weapons and trying to kill the monsters. The actual combat gimmick, though, is that monsters are weak to swords, axes, or lances. And your character can wield three different weapons that you can switch between on the fly. So you're generally on the battlefield switching between the weapons as needed to kill monsters. Battles end ridiculously quickly. We're talking like 20-second bouts half the time. Bosses may have a little bit more health, but usually the way to get around that is by letting your demon soul gaze charge up from combat, which allows you to temporarily summon the demon lord themselves to come onto the field, and they just do ridiculously more damage than the characters can. So milk it for all it is worth. While you're on the actual map side of things, though, you're usually looking for like twinkles on the ground that can yield items. Sometimes you might be able to find a hidden endangered species themselves, which is like little characters that are hidden on the map. And if you can find them, they open up items to be purchasable at the shop in addition to the normal fare. When you're not on an adventure, another thing you can do is check to see if your relationship status with one of your party members and some side characters has reached a certain point. Because one weird side trick to the game is that at one point someone comes along, he's called the love Gigi Guru. It's a really wacky name. Some old guy in a Hawaiian shirt is like, love is the key.
Oh, that's very cursed.
He shows up and tells your character, like, maybe the reason why you're so bored in life is because you need love, baby. So he pretty much puts the idea in your head that romance is the key to get stronger and also to find life fulfillment. And your one of your vassals thinks that the idea is like, hey, by finding romance, you can procreate, which means you can live on. You get another generation can factor in, which is kind of funny because this itself is a positive note, mind you. But the idea when you toss what the old man was saying is kind of funny. You can date men or women. So if you choose a guy or a male or a female demon lord, you can date a male or female character. Doesn't matter. It's just having fun, which is good for me because I chose a female demon lord and I'm dating women, baby. I know what I like. So clearly there will be no procreation there, but there will be a lot of fun at places like bowling alleys, movie theaters, and other wacky places like the Wacky Taffy Factory. I made that up, or did I? You don't know. It might be in the game.
I really hope you aren't procreating in a wacky taffy place. That'd get really bad.
Are you kidding me? That would be the best place to procreate, the Wacky Taffy Factory.
No.
It would get sticky. Yeah. It would get taffy everywhere.
Yeah, that's what I call a sticky situation.
Anyway, there's like crafting in this game too, isn't there?
Yes, that is a large part of the game as well, in that the weapons that you use can't be purchased in this game because the whole concept of the Maglum is that it's crafted by humans for the purpose of defeating monsters. So your character is skilled in the ability to craft Maglum. You find new resources throughout your adventures or as rewards for completing quests. You can then take those items to the Maglum Forge to create items off of a list of weapons that are on available to you. There's like 52 or so different weapons.
Jesus.
And of those weapons, they can be built in either A grade, S grade, double S grade, or legendary grade, depending on the resources you've got. You will not build all those weapons, and you will not build all those weapons to the highest standing. But it is nice that the option is there for you should you desire to, you know, grind up a bit and get some really super duper dapper gear. Now, the thing I got to say about this game, though, is that it's weird in that I'm going to be blunt. The combat itself, it's not bad, but it's not great either. If anything, it's just a means to pass the time. Like, it was like, start battle, run, blah, 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 blah. Just beat guys up and you're done. Moving on. Beat guys up, blah, 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 moving on. But despite that, what I really felt was enjoyable about the game, the thing that would make me ultimately recommend this in the end of the review, is I like the writing and the characters. I liked engaging with them and getting to know who they were as individuals and seeing them communicate with each other. I like the fact that your main character is fully voiced for the most part. And on different dialogue choices, you get to choose things that are rated between, like, your responses are quoted as being either demonic, funny, or cool. And depending on what you choose, that slowly leads you towards acquiring titles, which is bolster your stats and change the title you refer to. Like, instead of being like Blade Lord Killers, like, you can be like, you know, Wacky Taffy Connoisseur Killazert, or, you know, Drunkard in Training Killazert. And same goes for all your other party Stop members, too.
The Wacky Taffy tonight. Jesus, man.
I don't, because I want some Wacky Taffy right now.
Talking about Wacky Taffy.
I can't help it. It's in my soul, my blood.
So anyway, Maglum Lord is sitting there at $39.99. What are your thoughts on this?
I didn't realize we were still talking about that game even. Oh God!
I will say it's honestly a solid try, because again, I genuinely feel as though the combat isn't going to win any awards or nothing. So if you're okay with the idea of, you know, taking a system that isn't bad, it's just not grand, in favor of getting to the cool element being the narrative and character writing and voice work, then that's where the try it comes in. I personally had fun playing it, despite my concerns, so take that for what may.
Cool, sounds good. PQ, bring this one to Xbox. I'm interested in it. Next game to talk about is Sifu, developed and published by Slowclap, released February 8th on PS4, PS5, and Epic Game Store for $39.99. Sifu is the new game from Slowclap, the independent studio behind Absolver, a third-person action game featuring intense hand-to-hand combat. It puts you in control of a young kung fu student on a path of revenge. Tim, tell us about your time with Sifu.
Oh, yeah, Sifu. Let's talk about it. Yeah, a lot of my time with Sifu was not great because, I don't know, they patched it like halfway through the review period. And the time before it was not as great. And then it got better. So that's good.
What did they
patch? But yeah, this, they made some, I'll get into it. They made some balance changes ahead of release for the better.
Ah.
So this is a game that is a homage to East Asian, you know, Chinese martial arts movies. You are, the game opens, the tutorial level of this game is actually pretty freaking dope, where you soon find you're playing as the antagonist who is fighting his way through this family estate, and the game is introducing you to all its fighting concepts. And then at the end of it, you assassinate the father of the family and you kill his 12-year-old daughter. But it turns out the daughter is brought back to life by this magic medallion, or son, I guess. You can pick the gender of your character in this game. I picked daughter, so boys don't exist.
Who's going to pick the dude? Come on now.
Good lunch. I don't know.
I don't want to scare the dude's ass.
I'm not playing Sifu. I'm playing white
food. Straight women, too.
God damn it, Pernell.
So, it's a pretty cool, you know, introduction to the game as you're going through this estate, and it's graphically cool and you're whooping the shit out of guys. But then you pick up the game proper as the little girl who was killed and brought back to life, who is now 20 years old and is out to get her revenge on these fuckers that killed her dad. So yeah, this game is a beat 'em up with inexplicably a fucking run based structure that doesn't work very well, in my opinion.
Yeah, but when you were talking to me about the game and you said it was a run based beat 'em up, I was really confused.
Yeah, I was confused because going into this and not really knowing much about the game, I kind of assumed it was just like a straightforward level based like single player game. And I think it would be long story short, I think it would be better if that's what it was, or at least it had that as an option. And then you did this run based nonsense on the other end. Anyways, so the combat system in this game is pretty robust. It is not a simple thing where you're going to mash your way through. You do have like a light attack string, a heavy attack string. You have a little meter that builds up, which lets you do focus attacks. There's weapons to pick up. When you break a character's structure, more on that in a second, you can perform a finishing move. There is dodging. You can flip over tables that are nearby. You can parry attacks, you're blocking attacks. If you hold down the block button and then use the stick, you can kind of do this close, like, head bob weave around attacks, which is very important. Don't forget you learned that in the tutorial. You're going to have a bad time. That becomes absolutely integral later on. And yeah, I mentioned that your character and enemies have kind of what they refer to as structure, which is basically like a guard break meter. So if you sit there and block too long, this meter is going to build up and then your guard's going to be broken and you're going to be left wide open to get messed up by the enemy. But you will be wanting to do that to the enemies to break their guard so you can finish them off. All in all, like, it reminded me quite a bit of playing Sekiro, the most recent From Software game, which I can say for just a few more weeks that Sekiro is the most recent From Software game, which was very focused on these one-on-one battles and parrying attacks and breaking a character's guard, and it was very hard. And this game is also very hard. So if you are looking for an easy video gaming experience, you may just keep walking. This game does not have an easy mode. Could it use one? Sure. Why not? Wouldn't hurt anything. Of course, the easy mode, hard mode discourse is a fire around this game with people being like, no, it would ruin the game. You can't put easy modes in these games. Get good.
Wait, like, nah, people have been arguing about that specifically regarding Sifu?
Yes. Yep. Huh. Yeah. Because it's really hard. Like, anytime a really hard game comes out, like that conversation starts up again and goes the same way. And ultimately, and as someone who plays the Souls games, I don't think it would hurt anything to have an easy mode in it. Anyways, that's besides the point. It doesn't have one, so beware. But yeah, the combat system is tough, but like once you kind of learn the timings of your moves and you have to kind of learn the combination strings of your enemies, you can have a pretty badass good time just, you know, beat the crap out of this guy, flip over a couch, fight somebody over there, pick up a bottle, throw it at some person over there, flip back over again, corner this guy over here, do this, dodge this. Like, you can have some pretty cool action sequences in this game and some pretty satisfying fights. I'm sure that, like, watching this game on a GDQ or in the hands of someone who is really well practiced is going to look freaking awesome.
Nice. That's probably how I'll resort to playing the game, just watching someone else do it, because yeah, I suck at these kinds of games.
Yeah, it has five levels to that correlate with the five people that you're going out to kill. Very early on in the game, it does the old boy hallway fight. Like, you don't even get to like the first, like through the first part of the first level before it's throwing that at you. But there's some pretty cool environments. Like, the first level is kind of some back streets. You're going through like some drug houses, because the guy makes these drugs out of these plants, and that's pretty cool. The next level is like in a club, and there's some really neat areas later on in the club that are all just like lit by neon lights or fire burning around you that looks very nice. But anyways, Then the whole run-based aspect of this game comes into play, and you will start to be very confused. But one thing that's not confusing is you pick up items through the level that will let you unlock shortcuts to make levels shorter in future runs, throwing up the air quotes.
That's interesting.
I mean, usually when you think of a run-based game, you think of something where, like, there's random elements, like, be it, like, power-ups or enemy placements or whatever. This doesn't have that. Like, all the enemies are in the same place. The levels have the same layouts. You are given the same options to kind of power up your character. And that's it. The only thing that kind of plays into a bit of persistence is as you're playing and you build up experience, there is a whole list of moves that you can unlock, and these will be like additional focus maneuvers that you use meter for. They are additional actions you can take, like when you are pushed by an enemy, when you push an enemy. There's one where you can like catch a thrown object. There's other just like give you additional input options, like if you know, different combos, stuff like that. But so here's the kicker: you will spend experience to unlock them for your run, but you don't get to keep them unless you then pay that same amount more times to fully unlock it completely.
It is, so you have to buy it twice, basically?
No, no, Purnell, you don't. You buy it once, and then you get the opportunity to buy it five more times.
Oh!
And then, once you have purchased it five more times, then it is unlocked permanently across all runs. And here's the thing. So you buy it once on a run, and then say you buy it again, so you owe four more payments on your fucking kick combo student loan. Start another run, you have to unlock it again before you can make another payment on your kick combo student loan. So fucking stupid. That is the worst part of the fucking game. It makes no goddamn sense. And you will make progress on them eventually, but it becomes a thing where you're just like, well, I'm not going to use my experience on this run to unlock a bunch of abilities so I'm really cool and strong. It's just, well, I'm going to make a bunch of payments on my kick combo student loan so that I have that like paid off for the future. And it's just like, it's not great. It's not good. The other things that go along in this game... So there is a whole aging system. So this aforementioned magic medallion string keeps bringing you back to life. So you start out 20 years old. If you die once in the game, the medallion will bring you back to life, and you're now 21. Okay? If you die again, then your death counter goes to 2, and you come back to life, and you're 23. Three times, then you come back when you're 26, and like... You keep popping up and down, and like, but once you go past 30, one of the metals on this 5-metal chain breaks, and then you're 30. So there's like all this complicated math with like how you die, how many times you have died. So it like adds that counter to your age, and when it goes past a certain point, one of them breaks, one of the medallions breaks, and then your health goes down, but your attack power goes up. So by the time you're like a 70-year-old lady, fucking up these dudes in a club, you're a total glass cannon. You can take like a couple hits, but
you just wreck drunk. Everything.
Yeah, this was one and of the no things cane? that they patched in, is that they made the health penalty less severe and the attack bonus more significant, so that you could actually make better progress. It's really weird. It took me a while to figure it out, and you will death spiral really hard. You can get your death counter to go down. Like once you get past certain encounters, it will go down a tick. But if you're on a boss and you just keep dying over and over again, and suddenly when your death counter is like 6 or 7 or 8, you're just like, you're dead so fast. And it's just like really knocks the wind out of you.
Is that where the roguelike comes in, though, that you can ultimately just die? And like, that's the end of the game.
Yes. And then you have to try again.
Oh, so wow.
Do you keep when you die?
Only the things that you've paid off with your student loans.
Okay, so game. When you start your brand new playthrough, though, you still have that stuff then?
If you have completely unlocked them, you will have them. Otherwise, you go back to zero.
Okay, that's not as terrible as I was expecting.
So, you, when you complete a stage, So like when you complete the first stage, you then unlock the second stage, but you start the second stage at the age you finish the first stage. So if you finish the first stage at age like 54, then you only have like, you know, a few more deaths to go before you die out and, you know, you're done. So
I will say this though, by the sound of what you're describing, like obviously not so much death to you because only you can explain that because you played it. Mm-hmm. But it does sound like a pretty unique take on the roguelike
yes, concept. Say it, like,
say like it, motherfucker, not, say it.
Like it's very unique in comparison to like other roguelikes and how they do the one more run structure. Like I like that. Idea, like
yeah, but let's not confuse unique with good. Let's just throw that there. But so it behooves you. You know, because when I first cleared the first level and beat the first boss, who they made easier in that aforementioned patch, by the way, I was, you know, in my 40s. So it behooves you to go back and replay that previous level. So that way I did, and I got better. And I made it through so that at that point I was then starting the second level at like age 22 or 23, which is much more manageable. So you're going to find yourself, even after you pass levels, you're probably going to find yourself going back to clear them faster, better, I guess I should say, more cleanly with fewer deaths so that you're at a younger age, because you have to, like, it all persists. Like, you have to be not dead when you get to the fifth stage. But yeah, if you die on the second stage, you can restart from the second stage. You're just going to be at whatever age it was that you passed the first stage at.
No.
Again, this is complicated. Another thing that's complicated is scattered throughout the levels, there are these little totems, which you can get upgrades at. There's three different upgrade currencies, which you can pick an upgrade based on what your age is, you can pick one based on what your level score is, and you can pick one spending your experience that you should be putting into your student loans. But you only get to pick one of them at each totem, and that's it. And those are things like they'll improve your structure, they'll improve your damage to enemy structure, they'll improve like your weapon abilities. There's one that costs quite a bit that will erase your death counters. But yeah, and those, again, those, you only get to pick one of those. And it's weird. There was one time I made it to one and I couldn't buy anything because my score was too low, my age was too high, and I didn't have any experience on because I just spent it on, you know, buying some ability. And that right there, it feels bad, man. That doesn't feel good. Does not feel good. Yeah, but and that can just be confusing. Just, I don't know, the menus are not great besides that. So the only other thing is the game is very hard. It's hard, but not always fair, I would say. When characters whip bottles at you from off screen and crack you in the head, that sucks. There are points where the camera will be your enemy if you get too close to a wall, or there might be something in the foreground between you and the fight that's going on that can get in your way. And that sucks. It's mostly good. Sometimes it does. Because it, when you're running around, it hangs out like right behind your shoulder, and then it kind of pulls back when you're in a fight. But still, when you're like rolling up on guys, it can just be right there, right behind your shoulder. You're like, I'm trying to line myself up with this guy. Why are you right behind? And yeah, kind of messes you up. But
Root Beer is saying it sounds like one of those games where the devs are very good and miscalculated how difficult it would be for normal players.
I think they knew what they were doing. But I don't understand the run-based trappings of the game. It's like they had too many ideas that they thought were good. That probably sounds mean, but really, it's just like they tried to cram so much in there where I think you just do a straightforward level-based action game, and this becomes
so much
more straightforward. Yeah, because at a certain point, it's very grindy, and you're repeating a lot of the same stuff over and over again for not a whole lot of reward. And that's just frustrating. Like I said, there's only five levels. I didn't make it past the second level. That second boss is hard.
Shit.
Yeah. It is a hard game as advertised.
Well, it is also advertised at $39.99. So what are your thoughts on this one?
So this is going to be a try it. Like, I think the run based elements really muck up the game, and for people that are not looking for something that is super difficult, like I said, you can just keep on walking. But for those that are into that kind of like a super hard punishing experience, like, I mean, the combat is good. There is a high skill ceiling for it, and I think a lot of people will dig learning it and getting good at it and making like cool fight videos and putting those out on the internet. But I think there's some things that bar it from reaching a wider audience, unfortunately.
Its fighting reminded me of Sleeping Dogs, so I was kind of excited for that.
Sleeping Dogs rules. Yes. I love that game.
I want another one because I want to know who the fuck Nutping is. It's driven me nuts ever since I played that game the first time. I want to know who she is.
Yeah.
Well, you'll never find out.
Is that not something they let you know about in the game?
No, I'm pretty sure that developer died. I wonder who owns that now. Probably THQ.
Who owns Probably. THQ? Who knows?
It might as well be Konami, I guess. That's the way you guys are describing it.
Anyway, that's it for you, Tim.
That is it for me.
We will let you get going.
Yeah. I hope everybody's stuff gets better. I hope we're all flowers.
Hopefully next week we're all chipper.
Yeah.
Well, at the same time, man, like, all wounds, but
Brooke's not on the show and she took all of like the joy with her.
The joy is gone.
The joy is gone.
Happiness and joy just disappear with Brooke.
The joy is gone.
I think it's so funny that she hasn't even been on the show for a month, and already we're just like completely leaning on her for like all the positive vibes in the show.
Absolutely,
come back.
That's how you know we like. Like,
honestly, having been friends with her for like a decade, I could say that is a known effect.
Is that a Brookism?
Yeah. We miss her.
Or as her name goes, we made a Brookie mistake by undervaluing her presence in the group.
Damn.
Hey, that was her. She owns. That's her pun. I'm just it's borrowing
true. It. It's true.
It doesn't it's make it any pun. Better.
No. Well, it's a pun. Of course it doesn't make it better. Puns are terrible.
I'm about to say, good pun is a problem.
Tim's just like, all right, peace. All right, we got to move on anyway. Next game to talk about is Rise of the Third Power, developed by Stegosoft Games, published by Dangan Entertainment, released February 10th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Rise of the Third Power is a retro-themed console-style role-playing game loosely based on the political climate of Europe in the late 1930s. The story takes place in the land of Rin during the height of the Age of Sail, following the events that would lead to the greatest war in human history. Pernell, what's going on in Rise of the Third Power?
In Rise of the Third Power, you play as a man that goes by the name of Rowan. At the very beginning of the game, so again, not a spoiler, just the introduction, you and your friend Kareen are being tasked, for whatever reason, with preventing the wedding of the... I can't get the damn country names right, so just forgive me for not saying it. You're trying to prevent the marriage of that country's princess to the son of the king of a neighboring country. And initially, obviously, you don't know why. You just know this is what you've been tasked to do. And of course, as the story sequences progress, you and your band of eventual merry troop bandits, whatever, are ultimately working together to stop this war that is going to take place by way of political intrigue, tyranny, and lies, deception, you know, all those buzzwords that people love to use in these sorts of games. Now, generally in this age, with my pessimism, when I hear, you know, 16-bit style role-playing game, I usually kind of turn my nose and go, I know where this is going to go. The bin. The rubbish bin. But Dangan Entertainment was the publisher.
Is that a shot
game.
At Kemco? You bastard.
Yes.
I like the Kemco RPG.
How
everything's shot at Kemco, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you know what game is next, by the way?
Don't listen to them, Kemco. I love you.
Oh, yeah. Square Enix seems to own Sleeping Dogs now.
Chris does love Kemco. I'll give him credit. That's what's good about our show. We're not a monolith. We have differing opinions. It's good. But due to the fact that, you know, Dangan had their name attached to it, I was willing to give it a try. And to be frank, I'm very glad that I did, because this game is actually a lot of fun. The writing is really good, and I like the graphical style to it, and I like the combat, which I'll talk about right now, I guess. Combat is turn-based. You have the typical time meter at the top, where it's not like Grandia, where it slides across a bar. It's just images that tell you the order of operations. When a character gets a chance to attack, they can use either a normal attack or a special skill. But the trick here is that different characters function in different ways. So, for example, the main character, he doesn't have a magic meter. He has a fury meter. So his whole purpose is he's meant to tank things, you know, suck up, use a taunt skill to suck up all the damage. And each attack he takes in, he builds his fury meter, and he can do like fury attacks, like attacks that are powered up by it. Corrine, her whole thing is like she's a more of a traditional, like she has like a skill, you know, hit skill points gauge. You know, she does attacks and it drains down. But of course, one of her attacks is really powerful. Honestly, I borderline call it broken because I'll never stop using her in the whole game, called Death Blow, where it costs 60 of her 100. And if she kills someone with it, she gets 20 back. So, and then the other characters have like MP instead of, you know, skill points, and other characters that have like ammo where they have to reload their gun. And it's actually kind of cool how that works, because every character functions a little differently. Each character also has like a sort of team gauge where, if you feel as you fight with them together, they eventually learn team abilities where two of them can do it if they're both charged up at the same time and one of them gets a turn. So, for example, Rogue Toss is the very first skill you get like this. It's a team skill that Rowan and Corrine does, where basically they do like ample damage by combining two of their strongest attacks into one special attack. And it's got a nice animation to it and colorful. One added touch that I like about the game is that when characters do critical damage with their attacks, there's like a weird added twitch to like the color. Like if you're going to do an attack that has like a blade for one character and it's going to be critical, you'll see like the blade twinkle a bit before she goes into it, so you know it's going to hit hard. And it's kind of cool. I was like, tough player there. I enjoy the fact that also characters, when you win battles, characters don't have individual experience levels. You get experience as a team, which is good, because this isn't one of those games where you have to burn through revive potions in order to keep a character alive just so you can get experience at the end of a battle. You can just go all out if you need to. And when your team levels up, you'll gain talent points. And the talent points can be used for various members of a team to give them, you know, enhancements on their individual skill boards. These skill boards aren't particularly massive or intricate. They're simple boards, usually that may have like one splinter, like, you know, it goes straight across. And there's like three offshoots that go to the side things, nothing crazy. But they're unique enough for these characters that you kind of decide, you know, hey, I want to give skill points to this guy before I give them to this person, because what they get is worth more to me in combat than what they'll get. Like, I've maxed out one character while pretty much ignoring another character because I know what I like. And I like Corrine.
You know what I like? That you said unique.
I'm going to say it a lot because it's cool. Now, it's fun in the sense that, like, the narrative is good. I will say it. I'm surprised by how well written this game is. It's like I enjoy reading what these characters have to say. No one feels like they're speaking fluff. Nothing's really excessive. It's good writing. It's legitimately good writing for an indie game. And I believe that deserves the praise, because from my recollection, the guy who made this game has been working on it for many years. Like, I think he started prototyping it in like 2011 or something. And then he finally managed to finish it. This is a good game. If anything, the only real issue I had with it is that, before I get to the issue, also, I forgot to mention, combat itself is also pretty fun. Like, I sat down, or fulfilling. It has difficulties at the beginning of the game, and I recall choosing hard mode for my gameplay, and the game difficulty, I never felt like I had to grind. There is a difficulty saying where they always say, if you want to grind, here's the one for you. I ain't doing it. But what I do like is when I can say, hey, if I just fight guys, I should at least be capable of winning battles. I can always go back and grind more if I need to, because the game does give you the ability to respawn enemies to fight them again if you need to, in areas where they're limited. But for my gameplay experience, battles were tough but fair, in the sense that I don't think I've ever lost one, but I've definitely lost a character or two in a battle. You want to make sure you combine, you know, proper skills to help each other out, you know, characters supporting each other and blah, blah, blah. The only issue I came across in the game, though, which is unfortunate, but it's not a game breaker, because I did come across a few weird glitches. For example, I was at one place, which is like a desert fortress, And I was able to like walk, I was able to clip through some of the walls that I wasn't supposed to at one point, which allowed me to just kind of get stupid and run around in places I wasn't supposed to be. And then another glitch I had, and this was probably the weirdest one I had. It was a major story point where they introduce you to a character. The whole narrative plays out. The character walks out of the room by opening and closing a door. And then, without replacing any of the actual people, the entire story sequence goes again. So all the text boxes pop back up. And all the characters start talking again, but the characters haven't repositioned from the previous playthrough. So say, for example, a character moves two spaces to the left on the first time it played through, they're in the same place they were before, but they move another two spaces to the left because they're still on the screen. And I guess he programmed it so that the character walks after this dialogue statement goes by. It's pretty funny. It wasn't a game breaker, but for a second, I was like, what the hell's going on? Did he mean for this to happen? Weird. But all in all, the gee, how much am I praising this game in a sense of how much I'm enjoying it? I'm doing 4 in February this month, and I got a lot of games I got to review this month. Which means not every game, most of the games, aren't getting beat. I'm beating this game in 4 in February. I'm gonna finish it. It's going to get completed because I'm enjoying it that much. And the music is really good, too. I like the music. It's got a very Celtic style to it in a number of places. Like the boss theme has violins.
I heard Celtic, I'm happy. What are we talking about?
good that Aki pays attention.
Color. Yeah, Celtic battle themes. It's a really good game, and it definitely gets a good recommendation. If you're the type of like retro, you know, JRPGs, you know, SNES era style and graphic quality, you can't really go wrong here. I think you'll have a wonderful time. There's even side quests, so you can do side quests if you want to get some extra relics that will give you permanent boosts in your team stats. It's good.
Rise of the Third Power is sitting at $19.99. What are your thoughts?
I'd say it's a solid buy. Pick this up when you can.
Cooly cool. All right, next game. Ambition Record, developed by X-Create, published by Kemco. Released February 4th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and Steam for $14.99. The Count who rules the northern part of the kingdom has used forbidden secret arts and raised the flag of rebellion against his king. Raphael takes up his sword on the orders of the king to suppress the revolt, but then the Chancellor, who should be at the core of the king's court, starts to act in an incomprehensible way. Beliefs and ambitions clash fiercely in the unexpected twists and turns of battle. Chris, tell us about what's going on in Ambition Record.
I don't know. That all sounds very complicated. The game itself isn't even that complicated. Which, by the way, I'm going to start this review off by saying apologies to Brooke. She's actually been here for 3 months and 1 week. I lost track of time big time. Ambition Record, or Record, I actually don't know. this is the latest Kemco X-Create jam. Now, normally, this is the part where I go into like a spiel about, you know, how Kemco X-Create games go, but this one actually is kind of different. They're trying something new, and I can't believe it.
Ooh.
So, what's going on with this one? It is the same. I'll say what's the same about it first, I guess. A Kemco X-Create RPG is basically a 32-bit style RPG that, some people have accused them of being a little bit cookie cutter. They always feature a male protagonist. They always have a secondary character that's female, possibly a love interest. Then they have an uninteresting third character and a fourth character who's a bit of a wild card. You always have to, like, just go around towns and then the local dungeon and then go to the next town, etc., until, you know, there usually is like some kind of twist to start the third act off, and then, you know, then you win and everything's good and on to the next one, you know, as Divine Infinity or whatever. So the difference between this game, besides the fact that the female, like, possible love interest that, you know, that you come across, the ingenue type, is actually the fourth character this time.
Dun, dun, dun.
All the other things hold true, except that now this game is fully presented in 3D with polygons and everything. So this does not have the fancy sprite look that all the other games have. It is... And, you know, this is something that they've messed with ever since, especially in that one series that also starts with A, the Alphadia Genesis series. kind of have this going for it, where like it will be 2D sprites and backgrounds that, you know, look kind of flat, but then you get into battle and then it's like actually 3D with camera angles and everything. This game instead is actually fully 3D and it's consistent across the map and the battles. Everything's kind of still presented in a little bit of an isometric view. The characters are kind of chibi-fied. And honestly, like, I don't mean to go on about the graphics, but like that is such a difference in this game, and I actually quite like it. It gives this game a fully PS1 feel, whereas, you know, because the graphics are nice and crispy clean HD, it still looks nicer than that. Actually, the character models look really cool. And it's things like, you know, their hair still moves, you know, dynamically when they turn and like things like that. So it's like they're actually animated. They're not just a bunch of polygons thrown together with textures.
It's like PS1 HD.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, however, that the background or the actual map does sometimes have like, you know, stretched grass.jpg as the texture, you know. But it adds to the charm. So yeah, this game stars, like I said, always a male protagonist. They always alternate between being like the serious, insufferable type or like a kind of bright and sunny, good guy type. And this one's the latter category. His name's Raphael, and he is actually a well-known decorated like leader of a band of mercenaries. So it's a little
bit... Does he have brothers? No. Michelangelo Donatello?
That's not revealed in the game, but I hope it is. and his hair is red, so he is the red one.
Oh!
Yeah. But it's kind of... works. It's kind of cool because, like, you know, even though this game does feature children saving the world, at least the main character is kind of an adult, and I like that. Like, that kind of harkens back to Lufia, where, you know, the main character is actually like a well-known decorated like soldier instead of, you know, a 12-year-old. Having said, two of the characters in this game are probably 12 and are also soldiers. And then the wild card, of course, is a green-haired lady called Alexia, who is like a military strategist, but also just like unapologetically literally asking characters to like sleep with her and stuff. Like, she is like really out there, and nobody can tell if she's serious or not because it's an anime. leads to awkward situations, which is kind of cool. The characters are actually pretty charming, but the thing that I like the most about this particular foray is the music. Holy crap. Like, they always do a good job with the music, but I really quite enjoyed, like, the battle themes in this one. They go real extreme on, like, metal with synths and, like, you know, really jamming it out. Another thing, like, where this is like other similar X-Create games, this does feature the lottery system, the two-part lottery system, rather, where you can get lottery tickets randomly dropped from battles, and also points that you can save up to either purchase game-breaking awesome stuff or, like, roll the dice for even game-breakier type, you know, top-end gear and stuff. But, of course, it's a little bit more balanced in this kind of game. But it's still fun to do. You know, it does have an arena feature, which is, you know, common in these games. It also does have the weapon upgrade system, wherein you can have your weapon eat other weapons to get stronger.
Nice.
And it's kind of cool in this one. Like, it's a little less time consuming than the other ones. Like, it's a little more simplified. Plus, now you can do it with armor. A lot of the other games don't let you do it with armor. So it's actually really cool that you can build up your... customize your defenses as well as offenses. Plus, this game does have what I'm going to call a job system light. You can choose to like change your job, and that will get you progress towards more skills and, you know, kind of different ways of being able to play. But they aren't super important. It's just really to get your character like kind of the skill set that you want them to have. Again, it's four characters that join you permanently for the rest of the game within 5 minutes of starting the game. So you're very you're very set here, and you don't have to worry too much about, you know, things getting in the way, like plot or whatever. And the plot is,
I don't mind that. And I like that about the Kemco games. They keep it simple. And I like that, like, in my RPGs. I don't want to deal with 101 characters. I don't want to deal with countless upgrades. Just give me a simple, easy, just fun, casual RPG. That's the shit I need, man.
Yes, That is actually exactly what this is. And but I will say, oh, and actually, even though the characters are chibi, the monsters look amazing. Like, they'll throw in a full screen size dragon in there just for no reason, and it's really cool. And it's kind of funny because the early dragons are just literally called dumb dragon. It's kind of funny. But yeah, like, the story is engaging, but not overly complicated. Like I said, the description sounded more complicated than the story I saw. The characters are somewhat uncomplicated, but they're still engaging. You like the way they talk to each other. You know, you have a girl that stands as the stand-in for, like, the player so that they have to explain things to her, and in that way they're explaining to you. It does not have, however, the obligatory teaching somebody how to jump down. like, that is in almost every game for some reason. They teach you, like, oh, you can just jump down from here by holding, you know, the directional button in the direction of the way place you want to jump. You know, like, overly complicating the most simple things. Like, they actually didn't have that in this game, and I was like, wow, amazing. Oh, we're making strides.
Progress. But this one's $15. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, totally worth it. If you are... a fan of the Kemco games, this is another banger. It's really good. It's not attached to any of the other properties as far as I know, so it's a standalone adventure. If you're just a fan, like you said, of casual RPGs that, you know, can get extreme if you let them, but it can also be, like, you know, through DLC and also just stuff that's actually built into the game, this can be turned into a cakewalk if you like. Yeah, if you're into that kind of stuff, this is definitely a groovy way to have fun with it.
Cool. I like the term groovy. That works.
Groovy.
next up is In My Shadow, developed by Playbay Games, published by Overgames, released February 11th on PS4 and PS5 for $11.99. Play with shadows using your imagination to solve brain-twisting platforming puzzles as you unfold the journey of loss, nostalgia, and acceptance. Pernell, tell us about your time with In My Shadow.
So In My Shadow is a pretty straightforward but interesting puzzle game where you are playing as a shadow girl, basically. Shadow woman as a shadow girl. And the point is, you're playing as a shadow person. And you are being made to traverse levels that take the form of walls of a house. So each, I guess, area of the game would be like a room in this house. And that room might have, say, 10 stages. And what ends up happening is you are starting at the left side of the room, working your way to the right, sometimes around corners of the wall. And so as a shadow, your platforms that exist in this game are made up of shadows from objects that exist within the room itself. So a table or a cushion or a chair, whatever. So the gameplay takes the form of two phases. There's the setup phase and the execution phase. The game doesn't call them that, but I am. So, setup phase is you moving the objects in the room, whether they're, like, basically all around, like up, down, left, or right, in order to try to position them in the best possible place to cast a shadow that will allow the character to traverse the space. Some objects can cast, you know, depending on the object, different types of shadows can be cast. Some objects don't cast a shadow at all. Other objects, weirdly enough, have shadows that break. So when you step on it, it collapses. I don't understand. Doesn't matter. I'm a shadow girl on a wall. but that's the way the game works. So each level has you tasked with trying to use different objects to cast different forms of shadow. Then there's the execution phase, which has you controlling the shadow girl, trying to traverse the shadows that you have positioned on the wall, with the hope being that you can collect the memory fragments that are scattered along the wall space, and then get to the end of the stage by touching the animal or person that is waiting for you there, which is also a shadow, by the way. Honestly, that is the game flow. Though I have some weird vibes with it, because I was having fun with the game, but the thing about it, there's a few things that mess with me. One is that it may just be due to the nature of the beast, but you will find yourself switching between the setup and execution phases quite a few times, because it takes a lot to get used or accustomed to, like, her jumping height and just the right spacing that the objects will need to get, so you can actually get around the room in the optimal way, because you have to do it all in one go. You can't, like, move stuff, get to a spot that you consider safe, then back out and move stuff around again. It has to be one solid trip to make it work. The next thing is that it may be how they wanted it to be. I don't know. But there were times where I was getting hit by objects that I couldn't see or didn't know was an obstacle. For example, very early on in the game, they introduced like spikes on the floor. Why are there shadow spikes? I have no friggin' clue. But again, I'm a girl in the shadow. Who cares? I don't understand. But as a result, much of what you're doing with the objects is placing them so that you can jump across the spiked floors and not, you know, die from them. However, there were a number of spaces where there were no spikes, which gave me the impression that I could walk on the floor. But then when I stepped on the floor, I died. Also, there were times where I would jump in the air and get killed by something I couldn't see. Like, my guess was maybe it was a shadowed object that grew faint because the light wasn't as strong there, but the object was technically
moving. That sounds like a glitch, because you should have been able to see everything, because I reviewed this on the Xbox, and you should be able to see everything. If it's not, then it was a glitch.
I'm glad to hear that. That means they can fix it then, because like, it was a level, it was one of the first levels where you could like, where you had to go from one wall to the other. So you had to place a chair in a way that you could land on it, but there was a memory fragment in the upper left corner at the corner of the wall. So I was like, okay, well, as long as I can dodge the spiked wall, the spiked bar that's going across the screen, I can jump over and just come back if I position the chair right. But I would jump straight up into nothing and die. So I was like, this is annoying. So I couldn't figure out what was killing me. So that kind of thing bugged me. But hearing that it's a glitch and that you didn't experience that when you played it means that they can fix it here too. So hopefully they do. Or if they have a question about what level I'm talking about, they can always ask me. I'll gladly tell them.
Yeah, because all the shadows, no matter where they are, there's no change in how faint they are. They're all the exact same. So you should be able to see everything clear as day.
Okay, that's good to hear. Yeah, so developers, if you're listening, it's a really hard game. Yes, it is. They don't, again, like, it, thankfully, perseverance wins the day in that you don't have a life counter. And as long as you're willing to sit through the trial and error, you will be able to solve these puzzles. But they're not easy. They're not cakewalks in any way, shape, or form. If you're an achievement hound, also, I'm sorry. Because there are... I got one achievement by accident, and I'm not quite sure I would ever get it on other levels that they did it, where they said, like, you know, get through five stages in this room without dying.
Yeah, I got two of those, and I'm missing the other three.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think I'm not even sure I'll get two, because like on that second world, I was already dying. I was like, well, for the sake of the review, I'm going to keep pressing forward. No time. But the levels get hard pretty quickly. But again, I was enjoying them. The only hiccup I had, and aside from the hiccups I already mentioned, I felt like this was the kind of game where I didn't want to just stick with it for hours. This was a game where I picked up, I want to do a few levels, put it down, come back later, do a few levels, put it down, and come back. Because the gimmick itself is pretty static. Like, it introduces like new elements, per se. Like, you know, this object doesn't actually cast a shadow. Things like that. Or this object is immobile. But the game is still pretty much hop across the shadows to get to the object, to eventually hear a story about how her family life was a little rough when she was a kid, and how she's trying to reconcile with that, being that she wants to go back and talk to her family again. So it's like, okay, I'm good for now. I'll come back later and do it again. but for what it is, like, I like the gimmick. I like the premise behind it. I like when games try to do a little bit different with a very crowded space. And I feel as though, believe it or not, though there have been games that have done this, I don't think enough games have done Shadow Play as their primary mechanic. I think the last one I remember was, what was that game, Contrast?
Yeah.
And that was a while ago. So, I mean, I think this game is worth paying attention to. It's a solid time. And you said you played through the whole game too. You played through Aki?
Oh yeah, I didn't 100% it, but I did get completely through the game. After you beat it, you cannot go through prior levels to try and get those Don't Die achievements. You have to start a brand new game.
Yeesh, do not finish the last room. Thank you for that advice.
Well, no, you can replay the levels. They just don't count towards that achievement.
Oh.
So every room you've gone through, if you haven't got the no deaths or no dying for like five rooms or whatever in that area. If you've already played and there's not five ones that you haven't played, they're not going to count. You have to start it all over again. Oh, wow. Thankfully, you can skip every level though.
Well, that's good. So you can skip to the levels you care about for the purpose of going for the achievement on each attempt.
Yeah. They said that I mentioned that, and I don't know if it was the publisher or the PR group or what, but I mentioned that just on Twitter one day, and someone I know added them, and they said they were aware of that, and they were trying to work on a fix for that so you can replay old levels and still get the achievement, but nothing so far, and that's been since whenever I reviewed it. Yeah. So I think that was a week or two ago.
Well, hopefully the non-shadow killing shadows is more priority for them. They knock that in the bud because woof.
No, the game's $12. Pernell, what do you think?
I do think it is a try because I did enjoy my shadow time playing around with it. So I mean, assuming that they look at that thing I was talking about before and remedies that. That makes it even a stronger try. But I like what I got out of the game. It was fun.
Cool. All right, moving on. The next title is Cubite Classics, The Humans by Pico, developed by Pico Interactive, published by Cubite Interactive, released February 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $7.99. The Humans are one of the first games of his time to present cooperation within characters to achieve the objectives, that is to make sure your tribe will be alive at the end of the day. Organization is the key, and pre-plan your time is highly important. I just read them. Chris, tell us about Cubite Classics, The Humans by Pico.
I just read them. So The Humans, this is a classic. Yeah, it's actually 30 years old this year.
Wow.
Boy. This was a puzzle game that came out for all the systems. And the interesting thing about this one is that each port was really different than the last, like different level layouts, often different music. It came out for like Amiga, Genesis, Game Boy, Super Nintendo. So this particular collection, appropriate considering it's on a Nintendo system, is the Super Nintendo and Game Boy versions, both included on one pack. So The Humans is like it. It's hard to get around. I'm just going to get this out of the way immediately. It's Lemmings with cavemen. that'll put it right in your brain, like immediately. What you know to frame this whole thing. It is a game by which you basically direct your cavemen characters to be able to get to one end of a stage to another using available tools and abilities that each caveman has. So you select one. On the Super Nintendo version, you use the left and right shoulder buttons. And in the Game Boy version, you actually have to employ a cursor because the Game Boy had less buttons. And, you know, that's just how it goes. You select your caveman, and then let's say that there's a ledge. Well, your caveman can't jump up a ledge or just climb. Like, that's impossible. So what you do is you get your caveman to that ledge, and then put them in a pose that's basically their arms in the air like a human ladder kind of thing. And then you direct the next caveman to then climb up the first caveman and, you know, and get up to the ledge. Okay, so now there's... there's a ditch, like, or there's two platforms, because, you know, it's platforms, they're just floating in midair, even though this is a realistic video game. Just kidding. So you had to get across that. Well, here's a spear. So then what you have to do is you pick up that spear, and then there's three different things you can do with a spear. What you want to do is use the spear as a pole vault in order to actually jump across the ledge. But then your next caveman has to get across there too. So you have to throw the spear back across the ledge for the next caveman to pick up. So it goes like that, and you unlock more and more tools as you complete more and more levels. You can unlock a spear. You eventually discover fire, as humans famously did, and that will clear up bushes that apparently are just insurmountable otherwise. Unless you burn the leaves off a bush, you just cannot pass it. And you eventually discover ropes, which, you know, let you get onto lower ledges without dying in the way that ropes do. But, you know, of course, you need a caveman to hold on to the rope because they figured out ropes before they figured out knots, apparently. So they couldn't just tie it off on a burned bush. And then, of course, you eventually discover hamburgers. That's that's definitely the thing that we most associate with cavemen, is a nice greasy hamburger. But anyway, so that's basically the gist of the game, is getting your cavemen from one side to the other and in different ways that kind of challenge your brain. Now, this being a 30-year, you know, the Game Boy version is exactly the same, but like I said, the level layouts are completely different, and there's a few different things that happen. But yeah,
are you sure it's the Super Nintendo version on there? I'm reading the PR, and it says that there's the PC version, the Game Boy version, and then the Genesis version.
I didn't see the Genesis version in this collection. If they would like to let me know how that is presented, because yeah, this when you open up the thing, it says 16-bit version, portable version. It doesn't even name the system. I only know because I played the Genesis version and the Super Nintendo version, and this is definitely, it might be a PC version that was ported directly to the Super Nintendo, but it has the same graphics and soundtrack and levels that the Super Nintendo version had. Although I will say, and this is, this, I was going to save this for the end, but basically... For some reason, the soundtrack, like, it has some frame drops, and also the soundtrack pops and slows down sometimes, meaning that it's not fully emulating the Super Nintendo version particularly well, which is weird. I don't see that often in official 16-bit re-releases, but so that was going to... I'll bring that back up in when I go into any kind of criticisms. But my main criticism has to do with actually the original game, and something, an opportunity that I think that Cubite might have had in porting this. So the thing about humans, and, you know, this is kind of the same thing with Lemmings, but Lemmings had gameplay wrapped around this. The characters, the cursor, everything moves so slow. And these levels are so large that you'll spend most of your time like just sitting there following this character as he just slowly walks towards the next thing. And, you know, like I said, you're setting all this up so that your one caveman can make it to the end and therefore you win. And especially in the Game Boy version, this just gets so, you know, it gets a little monotonous watching these characters slowly amble across the stages and getting through these obstacles and stuff. And I really wish that, you know, because they brought in some quality of life, like they gave you different filter options, different resolution options, you know, as well as the QOL that was in the games originally, like turning the soundtrack on and off and whatnot, difficulty levels also, which have to do with the timer. The timer, by the way, is you have a time limit to get from one end to the other, which is, again, in the gameplay, that's why the slow movement is also kind of stressful, is because you're on a timer. But I really would have liked a fast-forward function. I think that would have been really great. Most emulators have them. Even official emulation stuff has them. Or, like, a rewind function for newer players, because if you screw up, like, let's say you get all the way across the stage, but you forgot to pick up the gosh darn torch, and so now there's a bush in your way, and you have to go all the way back or lose the stage, you know, like, and then start it all over again. Like, those kind of things... You know, that was fine 30 years ago, especially with European games, because they just love torture back then. But, you know, in this day and age, there should be ways around that, I feel. But that, again, is a personal taste kind of thing, because these games are presented as they originally were. So, like, I can't actually complain about it. I'm just saying that, you know, this could have... They could have modernized it a little bit.
I mean, it seems like you are.
Well, yeah, but it's coming from my opinion. What is objectively bad is the fact that the music crackles and pops and slows down, and like some of the animation jerks around too, like in the 16-bit version only. So like that is something that I'm actually considering a legit criticism. That's not just my taste. I think that's something that needs to be patched out or something. But apart from that, yeah, it's decent.
Kellogg's.
Huh?
They ran that game through Kellogg's.
Right, exactly, yeah. Snap, crackle, and pop. But yeah, anyway, this yeah, it's a couple of... Couple pretty good puzzle games that'll they'll get your brain scratching, and they taste good in milk. So there you go.
Yeah, I fired it up on Xbox, and the main screen just says 16-bit and portable, so I'm not sure where the third version is.
Let us know. The features
page says three The Humans games to choose from, so I'm not sure, like, what's going on. Maybe it's got to be updated. Maybe there's something it's coming in the future.
They don't tell you in the game, that's for sure. And like I said, I know this game mostly from the Genesis version rather than the Super Nintendo version, so I know the Genesis version when I see it, and I didn't see it in this collection.
Well, it's $8. What do you think of it?
Oh, I've got mixed feelings about that, so I'm just going to give it a try it. If you're a fan of the original, then and this is your way to play it, then enjoy The Humans. If you like a nice, good old classic puzzle game that is maybe a little dated, but is definitely not, it's not unfun. So, yeah, I would say go ahead and pick it up. But, yeah, I think that there's some issues here that I would really like for the developer to address, especially before they go porting other games. And also, let us know about that Genesis port. I couldn't find it. Neither could Joe. So,
yeah,
where
I'm
is
not
it?
Sure what's going on with it. I tried looking in the settings to see if there was a way to switch the 16-bit version, but I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Get at us, Cubite. Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. One final game to talk about tonight. Thing. Yeah, we'll give an update next week, and if we find out what's going on, we'll give an update at least. But in the meantime, we got one final game to talk about that is called Land of Screens, developed by Serenity Forge, published by Way Down Deep, released February 4th on Steam for $5.99. When Holland's social media is lit ablaze by a recent breakup, she embarks on a new mission to ditch the social media saturation and discover some real-world relationships among a land of screens. Get it? There's the title. Aki, tell us about Land of Screens.
Okay, so that is basically the opening, and except for that is not her intention. She actually never really intends to get rid of her social media or to get rid of her phones or anything else until fairly late in the game. She actually keeps staring at it constantly and feeling more and more and more like crap, which is visually shown by the screen suddenly darkening and having a more somber, shitty tone. But she keeps end up losing battery life or getting a hold of a charger, but it doesn't work, or it doesn't work properly, or it breaks. So she ends up constantly losing access to this stuff, even though she wants to be on it constantly, because she's one of us, and all of us are constantly on that crap. So, you know, part of life now. And, she starts this off because she has something to do for work. She's an editor of some sort, and she's going to a big editor's conference. In other words, please blow my brains out. This is boring. Yeah, and afterwards she's planning on stopping by her folks' house for a family reunion of some sort where she was supposed to bring the boy, so yay! And basically every level is her just interacting with people, talking with them, trying to solve their issues, trying to get them off of phones in order to do stuff. Like at the first one, there's a party and she's trying to get everyone off the phone so they can all go play volleyball in the backyard. That's it. That's that entire chunk. And you just talk to the people and you figure out how to get them off the phones. And you just go about talking to each individual person as many times as you have to in order to get shit to happen. And every level is very much the same. She's getting people off of their phones to interact with other people for some specific reason. By the end, she's like, oh, phones are shitty. So is social media. And, social media legitimately is one of the worst things humankind ever created. It is a blight upon the entire planet. Realistically, it is. And she figures out something that I figured out years ago. It's pretty heartwarming. She's adorable. I absolutely love Holland. She's fantastic. And yeah, it's just tiny little snippets of her life. And it's just a cute little fun game. It's very chill.
Well, it's $6. What do you say?
Oh, hell yeah. Go get this. This is definitely a buy it. Even if you could get it free somewhere else, just buy it. It's really cute, and they deserve some money.
Cool beans. All right, that is it. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We made it through. Big thanks to John Ribbons at Roll 7 for coming on and chatting with me at the first half of the show. If you didn't listen to that, go back and listen to that. Go check out Ollie Ollie World. It is in stores now. $30, or you could drop like $45 for a rat edition with a bunch of extra content and goodies and fun shit like that. Thanks to Tim for being here. Thanks to Brooke for being our beacon of sunshine who wasn't here. Aki, thanks to you for showing up on a Tuesday show. Chris and Purnell, thanks to y'all for being here. Best wishes to my cat Peaches, who is going through a rough patch. Hopefully she will turn out okay. And Aki, hopefully everything goes well with you. And Purnell, hopefully everything goes well with you. Chris, nothing's fucked up with you, is there?
Nothing I've talked about.
There's plenty that's fucked up with him.
Wow, there you go. See?
Wow.
I don't even have to say anything.
Them's fighting words. Life. Holy shit.
Yeah. People can just go ahead and apply their own judgments to me at any time. It's all good.
All I was saying is that you're currently in Texas dealing with the power grid stuff. That's my thought. That was all.
Yeah. We got through that just fine, too, so that's good. Of the ice melted yesterday, so we're all right there.
Cool.
You didn't ask for final words. I was just going to say thanks to everybody for powering through all this, and thanks to Joe as well, and much love to Peaches.